about your disappeared. Now we I think we're ready to start. Members, I think you should be having the program for today's public hearing. We've got the Institute for Constitutional and Labor Law Studies, we've got NAFU, I think AgriSA should be coming as well. Are you Geoff? Okay, yeah, then we've got Geoff Lambsden. We'll see how it goes. We'll take Institute for Constitutional and Labor Law Studies, then also listen to NAFU and do comments and questions. Then from there, break for tea if it's there. But we're very hospitable, and there must be something. Yeah, and after tea, we'll take AgriSA and Mr. Lambsden. So without any waste of time, Mr. Van Niekerk?
Sorry, Chair, could I just have clarity on the Land Use Management Bill? Will it be debated this afternoon? Because it's not on the order paper.
Yeah, it's below the line. It won't be debated this afternoon.
Will not be?
Yeah, it will not be debated
okay.
This afternoon. Yeah. No, not this week.
Okay.
Yeah, not this week. Below the line. Yep. Mr. Kruger? Yep, time is up.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Honourable Chair and members of the committee, thank you very much, firstly and foremost, for once again inviting the Institute here to make submissions regarding the proposed amendment bill. I see there are obviously a couple of new faces. Let me just, by way of introduction, just make a couple of comments on the Institute and where we stand and what we are. The Institute is a Section 21 company established to, amongst others, within the legislative framework applicable in the Republic of South Africa, study, investigate, and comment upon issues of constitutional and labour law importance. And hence we are here today because of the constitutional angle that we propose to take today on the proposed amendment bill. The Institute is a non-partisan association and seeks to, amongst others, promote upholding of the Constitution, its values and importance within the broader South African community. Then, with regards to considerations, firstly, let us just say the Institute's comments and submissions on the provision of land and assistance amendment bill are founded upon the following relevant considerations, and this is the premise from where we will start off today. Firstly, consideration and implementation of all relevant provisions of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa is regarded as paramount and non-negotiable. Secondly, obviously, we've studied the provision of land and assistance Act 1993, hereafter referred to as the Act. And as such, we are in a position to answer questions in that regard. The Institute seeks to protect the freedoms, values and rights entrenched in the Constitution, and we are opposed to attempts to validate land reform through any process bringing about fresh discrimination against current lawful landowners and or occupiers or their dependents. The Institute is in favour of attempts to activate legislation whereby the process of reform is stimulated whilst consideration is paid to the realities and importance of various relevant factors, including. And then I come to a number of factors there, and let me just, because we had previously we had a question in this regard, when land reform comes to bear, we think that cognizance should be taken of modern-day micro and macroeconomic principles, the importance of sustainable investor relations, particularly with foreign investors whose investments are of vital importance to inter alia support our currency valuation. Thirdly, the sustainability of full-scale economic growth within the Republic of South Africa. Fourthly, the envious protection of constitutionally entrenched rights of all citizens. Fifthly, the accountability of national government in respect of balancing competing rights of citizens within the Republic of South Africa. Lastly, the protection of the rights and interests of all minority groups in the Republic of South Africa. I will then move on to our comments on the amendment bill. Firstly, let me say from the Institute side, with all due respect, we are opposed to the apparent fast-track manner in which the Department and Parliament wish to amend the Act. In this regard, it is emphasized that the Act, as it currently reads, provides for the provision of land as well as assistance to a far broader group of persons than what is intended through the introduction of the amendments proposed in the amendment bill. And that is one of our main arguments, submissions before you today. Should the amendment bill be adopted and the Act amended accordingly, all persons who may currently or in future qualify for land provision and or assistance in accordance with the provisions of the current Act, who are not regarded as historically disadvantaged persons, are excluded from the potential advantages afforded under the Act, as it currently reads. It would therefore be necessary to our contention that the implications of the content of the amendment bill be considered very carefully. It would also be necessary to seriously consider why it is intended that an exclusion of a large category of people, those not to be regarded as historically disadvantaged persons, should occur. Such exclusion of persons as referred to here and above is not only unfortunate but without merit and potentially unconstitutional. It would appear as if the amendment bill is introduced in an attempt to not only advantage the ideals of land reform, but also to disseminate the intention of Parliament that the provision of property and assistance would continue to occur to the express exclusion and detriment of others not regarded as historically disadvantaged. Any such intention is untenable and should be strenuously guarded against. The Institute is of the respectful opinion that the aforementioned implications of the bill cannot be countenanced. Then, our submission is that adoption of the amendment bill would be paying mere lip service to the protection of the rights and interests, including the potential rights and potential interests of persons falling within minority groupings within the Republic of South Africa. In effect, those persons not qualifying to be regarded as historically disadvantaged persons. The Institute acknowledges that the insertion of Section 1A, whereby the objects of the Act are described, is necessary. However, the following remarks are relevant. Clause 1A, 1A, 1 capital A, small a, numerical 1, imports the possibility that persons who already own land also qualify for assistance in terms of the Act. Secondly, the Act expressly provides in Section 10.2a that for the purposes of Subsection 10.1, a person who may be granted an advance or a subsidy are persons who have no land or who have limited access to land and who wish to gain access to land or to additional land. The amendment bill thereby expressly provides that even historically disadvantaged persons who already own land qualify for assistance in terms of the Act. We are of the respectful opinion that this intention is regrettable, as it may serve to be to the detriment of not only so-called historically disadvantaged persons, but also other persons who have no land or access to land. And the sharp edge of the argument is simply that persons who already have land should not be in the front of the queue when the advantages available in terms of the Act are being considered. The provisions of Clause 10 of the Amendment Bill, under the heading Provision of Property for Land Reform Purposes, is unfortunate and not supported by the Institute due to the following reasons. Firstly, sufficient and already far-reaching land reform legislation is in existence. The heading of Clause 10 stands in direct contradiction with the title of the Act. The latter is expressly limited to provision of land and assistance, whilst the heading of Clause 10, as proposed in the amendment bill, extends the provision of land to the provision of property for land reform purposes. Furthermore, the Institute has difficulty in understanding the necessity for acquisition of movable property and or business or economic enterprise as a going concern, and or shares in or the right title or interest in or to a juristic person or other entity or a trust to fulfill the intended purpose of land reform. The intention of the amendment bill is clearly not to advance and protect ideals and constitutional rights such as the right to equal protection and benefit of the law, see section 9(1) of the Constitution. The rights of a persons or community whose tenure of land is legally insecure as a result of past racially discriminatory laws or practices to tenure which is legally secure or to comparable redress, see the provisions of section 25(6) in this regard. Notably, such a person or community may potentially include also those not necessarily falling under the banner of historically disadvantaged persons or communities. This respectfully submitted that the amendment bill aims to limit the rights of persons not falling under the banner of historically disadvantaged persons in a manner which is unreasonable and unjustifiable in an open and democratic society based on human dignity, equality and freedom. This is particularly so in view of the fact that far-reaching legislation already exists in terms whereof the ideals of land and or property reform is being addressed. Such limitation of rights of persons not incorporated under the banner of historically disadvantaged persons cannot be countenanced, and in this regard the Institute relies on the provisions of section 36(2) of the Constitution, which reads, except as provided in subsection 1 or in any other provision of the Constitution, no law may limit any right entrenched in the Bill of Rights. In the premises, it would therefore be requested by the Institute that Parliament reconsider the whole of the content of the Amendment Bill, and that it be decided to reject the Amendment Bill as provided for in Section 75, 1A numerical 3, Roman numerical 3 of the Constitution. That, Chair, is in short our submissions regarding the bill. I'd be happy to make comments upon questions, or if you want me to clarify with regards to what I've just said, I'd be more than happy. Thank you very much.
I think, members, the best thing we can do is to listen to enough. I'm sure they'll come from a different conclusion than Mr. Kruger does. We'll then take it from there. Let me tell.
Thanks, Chairperson, members of the Portfolio Committee. Thank you for affording us the opportunity to come and make a small contribution to the bill. But I'm intimidated by that thing on the thing, if it can be removed, please.
What is it?
That thing, that if it can be removed. that thing. Especially the last part. thank you very much. Now it is. Now, I wanted it to be white. No. I wanted it to be white. You will see. Now, unfortunately, it's purple. Oh, yes. Well, Chairperson, Honorable Chairperson, we are absolutely very happy to be here in the Parliament of the People of South Africa, where we really believe that whatever conclusions we may reach would actually depend on dialogue and discussion. And this is clearly because we are South African. In this regard, particularly referring to the provision of land bill, we would like to make our submission in the following manner. That indeed the National African Farmers Union of South Africa records its full support for the amendment bill and sees it as constitutionally compliant and fundamental to transformational objectives of the Republic of South Africa. I would like to caution, though, Honorable Chair, to say that we come a long way, all of us, black and white, a long way that would really begin to make a contribution in order to redress what has happened in our country. Now, anyone against that, in our view as a union, is not reasonable. The basis of the amendment bill, therefore, is land reform, which has three aspects: redistribution, land restitution, and tenure reform, defined in its instrumental sense in the context of transformative South Africa, is seen as a way of contributing to economic development by both giving households the opportunity to engage in productive land use by increasing employment opportunities through encouraging greater investment. We have to acknowledge that indeed the investment, particularly in agriculture, is not what it should be. The basis of land reform is to ensure that previously excluded, and I'm saying previously excluded, not disadvantaged, previously legally so and constitutionally so in the past excluded and marginalized black communities would want to acquire ownership of land and participate in the total value chains of the economy, be in agriculture or otherwise. And we believe as a union that it should not constitute a crime to request this parliament to give us what we need in a manner that would be peaceful. Any legalistic tautologies to us is not important. What is important is a smooth, transitional and transformative arrangement so that agricultural sector can benefit in terms of locking in international investments and local investments. This, we must confess, that government has failed in this area over the last 15 years because of its apologetic tendencies when it has to affirm previously disadvantaged, excluded communities. But that is why our people would go to Pretoria and burn trains, because it would appear that for a black person to be listened to by those who know and by those who are in power is to react in the way that our community react. If that is what you want, so be it. But that is not what we want, because we want to think that we are decent people. But what would communities do if they are not being listened to? For, as a vision of new order of agricultural development, government envisages land reform that results in a diverse rural landscape consisting of small, medium, and large farms. One that promotes both equity and efficiency through a combined agrarian and industrial strategy in which land reform is the spark to the engine of growth. Section 1A must read, promote economic growth and empowerment. My union is of the view that both commercial and developing sector must be assisted. We are not promoting segregation or any kind of discrimination. And that is why we would argue in conclusion that budgets and everything must be considered properly. We believe that we have one flag, we don't have two flags. We believe that we are a one country, we don't have two countries. And that is why commercial should not constitute white, and commercial should constitute commercial in its proper context. And developing must constitute developing in its proper context. And don't come and tell us white or minority. We we are the same living in South Africa together. In particular, ladies and gentlemen, NAFO South Africa has been concerned with the extremely slow pace of land reform. 14 years after the new democratic order, qualitative and quantitative reform is yet to take place if we have to meet our 30% target by 2014. It is a fact that cannot be denied. We are not doing well in this area. It's a fact. NAFO South Africa hence welcomes this bill and sees it as key in the achievement of the targets, and also sees it as a means to give effect to 2005 National Land Summit and such resolutions, which proposed an active role for government in land markets. Additionally, the bill will make possible the implementation of the recently revised agricultural sector plan, particularly the area of equitable access that was agreed in 2004. Now we are reviewing it, and other related policy mechanisms and initiatives. It also welcomes forward for a discussion at the time to support the proposed resolution of the Agri-Consultation of Polokwane 2008, in which the farmers, black and white, met together to map their future. Let the farmers decide their future, and that let the lawyers do their laws in court. Let us do what we know better. Let us. This amendment bill, Comrade Chair, will assist to provide the Department of Land Affairs with a legal framework to enable meaningful partnerships with private sector, unions across the color line, and civil society, and together bring the expertise, resource, infrastructure much needed for a sustainable agrarian reform in the Republic of South Africa as a collective. The time of black and white is over, in our view. God has created people, not on the basis of race. And we have got no reason to question who you are, what color you hold. Indeed, we have no right to say so as well. Now for South Africa notes the debates and assistance around Clause 10.1b of the bill, which allows for the minister to acquire property on such terms as he or she may determine. And Section 12 of the Provision of Land and Assistance Act allows for land to be acquired through expropriation. We know that while the debate is healthy in the context of our democracy and will indeed contribute to the better legislation, it should not be used to retain the status quo. Should not. We have got to learn to address the fears of others without any apology. However, those fears must make sense, not only sense, but they must make economic sense for the growth potential of our South African agriculture. We therefore support this as is of the opinion that the minister must be given powers to expedite land reform, and we see this as a tool to be used wisely. We also take cognizance of all legal safeguards inbuilt in the Act of 1995, my apology, and related amendments and acts. And NAFO South Africa is confident it will serve its intended purpose within this framework. NAFO South Africa sees that opponents of the bill merely argue the legality of sections and definitions, but not the principles of expropriation. Moreover, justice and equity require that we make possible greater access of black farmers to the land. Furthermore, we know that many progressive supporters of change have begun to question the logic of market land reforms in a society so polarized by inequality and lack of access to resources. There is also a belief that there should be a mechanism to deal with the sector of exorbitant land prices, which have a tendency to hold the land reform process at ransom. And I would like to say what we are saying has got nothing to do with color, has got nothing to do with anything. All of us do that, black and white. And it must be looked at in that fashion. The resolution of the Land Summit of 2005 were very clear about the desirability of well-targeted state interventions in order to expedite land reform in South Africa. Current measures have not been able to fast-track reform. In particular, there is a need for speedy resolution of what is termed as difficult rural claims in order for the current landowners and the beneficiaries to move on with their lives. There is a tendency in South Africa to think and to suggest that landowners means white farmers. And it's not true. And it can't be true. And it's not going to be true. The landowners means government, means private sector, means white farmers as well, including all of us. We have as a collective a responsibility to change the image of agriculture not based on race. In France, Mr. Chairperson, when you touch a farmer, you will actually create a small revolution. Because we are the food producers and we only take pride. Now, failure to quell emerging stereotype opinions in many quarters who believe that black farmers cannot farm. Slow land reform will lead to food shortages and economic turmoil. Now, South Africa supports the objects of the bill, especially that in the past, land was transferred without meaningful support and assistance to the beneficiaries. We continue to say, Mr. Chairperson, that the mistake that we have made when the democratic government came in, we should have taken all the policies, all the laws that the previous government was doing and just dust it and use it. We should have done that, I'm sure. Then we would not be sitting here today, maybe. And no one would be saying, no, this law was this was what. Then we would continue. While we support the bill, the challenge would remain the indifference of government to resource the Department of Agriculture and Land Affairs adequately in line with Maputo Protocol, heads of state, in 2003. You cannot point a finger and blame others in the department while you know that you have not given them enough budget to implement. The Freedom Charter has very good resolutions on land matters. Despite that, we continue to resource this department in a very poor way. The head of state of Africa took very good resolution in 2003, but we continue to resource the Department of Land Affairs and Agriculture poorly. Now, if you say we must continue as we have been continuing, then we are not going to agree with you because we are not going to solve anything. We are clearly, clearly going right on the route of our friends, the north of us. And don't blame us when chickens are coming back to roost. This has been going on for the last 15 years, and it is becoming clearer that government does not take agriculture seriously. And we want to make sure that really this matter is told to you, members of the portfolio committee. You can't have this kind of budget that we are seeing. In this spirit, we would propose that the budgets of the departments should be raised by at least 7% of the GDP in the next financial year, in line with Maputo Protocol. It wasn't. South Africa has a duty and it has signed that protocol. Failure to do this may cause, in our view, a small revolution of the future, because the poor would then have to take a decision. Thank you very much.
I'm not sure about the scale of the smallness of the revolution. I see. No, he's just being diplomatic about it. Yeah. How many members do you have, by the way, Endaf?
Chairperson, yeah. Now, that one I will talk to you privately.
Well, I wanted to have an idea about the smallness of the revolution.
You see, let me explain, Chairperson. You know, if you listened to me, I said, African people, or black people if you want, for them to be listened, they have to engage by burning, by protest, by even burning trains. Black farmers have not done as yet. They haven't actually shown their own muscle. White farmers, black farmers have not done anything to this effect right now. Remember, we are one. We are farmers. And it is immaterial whether you are yellow or green. Now, this small revolution may not be small. I'm being polite. Well, I want to respond and say we are not being apologetic. In fact, it is government that is being apologetic. Because in fact, today we are talking of food prices. We should have started long time ago in 1994. We made a mistake, and it is the mistake that we must. We have unbelievable expertise in this country, agricultural wise. We haven't used it.
Okay. So, members, can I take hands for questions and comments? So you have been scared and threatened. Been threatened. Honorable Abraham said, all of it.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you to the presenters of the two submissions that we have just heard now. Chair, now I don't know Mr. Krier or is it Mr. Kruger?
Beauty is in the eye of the beholder, sir, but
Because as far as I know, Kriers are Boere people. You know, there was a president of the Boer Republic who was a Krier too. Chair, I have a problem with a submission by the Institute for Constitutional and Labour Law Studies. And I want to make an appeal to Mr. Krier. You know, when we start seeing ourselves as minorities, you know, I'm a South African, finish and klaar. I object to anyone else calling me anything else. Not even a minority, because I'm not a minority. I'm a fully fledged South African. And I think what we need, Chair, is a paradigm shift. And I think one needs to take into account that if one looks at the total land ownership scenario in the country, and if we go back to the colonial days where policies were based on repression, we then go to the days of National Party rule, who actually classified me as an Indian. And I'm no Indian. I wasn't born there. Classified my fellow compatriots into various linguistic and so-called ethnic compartments. Land ownership, Chair, unfortunately, 87% thereof vested in the hands of the so-called favored people of those days, white people. And we now live in an era, Che, where your whiteness or blackness or pinkness or yellowness, as my friend Mr. Matlala has said, no longer counts. And here we are talking of the agricultural sector. We are talking of food security, food production. In what way can we guarantee that? In what way can we enhance it? Furthermore, Chairperson, what we need to remember, and that's what I would like to tell this foundation, is that if you want to talk of minorities, and naturally you are using a word for what you would have normally termed white. Now, historically, as I've said, the land ownership patterns were completely skewed. And they still are. And we need to do a great deal to see to it that this skewed pattern changes. And I'm sure that Mr. Kriya will agree that if you want to take those pre-1994 laws and what their intentions were, then in the current situation, of course, the ownership landscape in our country will change. It's going to change drastically. And neither you nor I nor anyone else is going to be able to stop it. It is the sheer force of our population situation that is going to see to that happening. Now, Chair, I just want to come to a couple of questions with regard to the submissions that are made. I would venture to say that the submissions that the Institute has made, comments that they have made, are based on the draft bill which was published by the Department of Land Affairs for public comment. Now, the clause 1, capital A, in brackets, small a, in brackets, I, is eliminated from the current bill. It is not part of the current bill. So I would just draw your attention to that. Now, Chair, I've referred to the fact that the majority of the people that were classified anything else but white were totally excluded from land ownership. Now, does the Institute not see a need to provide land as well as assistance to those who were denied access in order to address the imbalances of the past? The Constitution, Chair, the Constitution to which Mr. Kriya has referred, the Constitution which we all view as one of the finest documents produced anywhere in the world, one of those, implores upon all of us, every person who considers himself to be a South African, it implores you that the state should take reasonable legislative and other measures within its available resources to foster conditions which will enable citizens to gain access to land on an equitable basis. And there I quote section 25, subsection 5 of the Constitution. And then I would like to ask Mr. Krier that since I've drawn his attention to the fact that their comments were based on the draft bill, whether he would like to give us his comments now in the light of these clarities on the current bill that is before us, the document which is under consideration, the bill which is under consideration. And if he doesn't have a copy, Chair, I would humbly request the Chair to see to it that the Secretariat makes that copy available. Chair, the other question to Mr. Krier is that if we accept that as South Africans we have a duty to correct what went wrong in our country, one of the problems in the acquisition of land in terms of the Principal Act has been that the state may only purchase immovable property. It could not purchase movable property. And there have been many cases where a farm has been bought out and the farmer was then compelled to hold an auction sale or in whatever other form to dispose of the movable assets. Now, I'd like to know from Mr. Krier, doesn't the Institute believe, I personally have some problems with regard to the transition from the date of purchase by the state and the takeover of those assets to the date by which someone is identified and someone takes over. But that is not something that you are going to be able to regulate by legislation. That is something that needs to be done in terms of by law. It needs to be done by regulation. It needs to be done by the will of the department to do so. And that's something that we will have to attend to. But in principle, the law has to lay down guidelines as to how things must be done. Now, don't you think that it'll be a good thing if a going concern is taken over, and at the time it's taken over, that the people that have been targeted as beneficiaries have been given the necessary assistance, the necessary skilling to be able to run that enterprise, and in many instances also to make use of the existing farmer or someone that knows the particular enterprise to be of assistance for a couple of years. Don't you think that that sort of thing is necessary to help our people to get into commercial agricultural farming? I think, Chairperson, I have taken too much time, but I think it was necessary to clear up a couple of misconceptions. And I trust, Chair, that we can move forward, forgetting about these things about pre-1994, about race and color and things like that. Because our task, Mr. Krier, and he is not a young man, ek is al oor die meer, our task is to help build this nation. And we are only going to be able to do it if we see each other as fellow South Africans, not pink, blue, yellow, green. That's not going to get us anywhere. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Holomisa, members, let's all be mindful of the fact that time may not cooperate as we move on. Yeah.
Yes, Chair, mindful of exactly what you are saying. I'll be short, more so that Mr. Abrams has covered almost everything that is of concern as raised by Mr. Krier. But I just wanted to know, what are minority groups? And I also want to know if I understood them correctly to be saying the bill excludes historically advantaged persons. Are they thereby saying that for land reform to proceed, as they say they support, it must also facilitate the acquisition of land by the historically advantaged, when we have not even finished dealing with those who are historically disadvantaged? And also on the question of they are opposing the minister having the power to acquire, among other things, businesses as ongoing concerns, like, and other economic enterprises. How do they believe that land reform is going to be sustainable if assistance is not given also to the new beneficiaries in terms of them and making sure that the economic enterprises that are tied to that particular piece of land are also acquired by the beneficiaries and are used in a manner wherein they are given the necessary support by the state. At what point will the acquisition of a farm going to be if you are not also going to acquire the business that comes out of that farm as a new entrant into this sector? I don't know, Chair, whether we are also allowed to direct questions to NAFU. Just one question. On the question of exorbitant land prices, how, in your understanding, do you determine that a land price is exorbitant? And also, in what way does the market influence land prices? And if it does, in what way does it delay land reform, as you say, these exorbitant land prices tend to?
Yeah, thanks, Chairperson. Welcome, Institute. And I was just commenting to my colleague, Inkosi cannot be my colleague. you know, that they said they are a non-partisan institute. That's fine. But when they were here last time, I don't know if it was the slip of the tongue or what, then they were established by solidarity. So if in fact you are a child of solidarity, obviously you are not a non-partisan. But let's leave that aside, come back to the presentation. You know, the slides that are appearing there are not the same as presentation before us. Unfortunately, we didn't receive that, I'm saying your slide there is not the same as presentation before us. Even the content, the numbering and some other areas, you see, you find that when I was trying to follow your presentation and with the document before me, of course, a little bit, but anyway, it's neither here nor there now. The first issue that I want you to address us on, you are then under consideration, it's paragraph 6.3. The Institute seeks to protect the freedoms, values, and rights enshrined in the Constitution and is opposed to attempts to validate land reform through any process bring about fresh discrimination against current lawful land owners. You know, I want to address us on the basis, because it seems to me you love the Constitution as I also love the Constitution. You must, when you address us on that 6.3, could you please refer also to the Constitution as referred in Section 25, Subsection 4A? Which talks about the equitable access to land. What is going to address me, when you address us, just try to compare that the Constitution requires certain things to be done. And somebody says something else. I'm not saying you're wrong, we are right. We are in a free country, you know. You can say whatever you want to say. You see, we are so free in this country in such a way that other people can insult us and there's nothing we can do. Well, the Constitutional Court is going to hammer us to say you have done APCD, Bill of Rights, and all those. I was just talking to my colleague here that, you see, the blunder that we have made when we came in, we're in a honeymoon, and it was every... we're in a honeymoon, everybody happy, and we forgot that the document that you are going to produce is going to be with us for many, many years to come. You only realize now that, you know, there were certain people that were sitting behind closed doors doing certain things that we're not really aware.
because we're so happy about this freedom. That is haunting us now, really haunting us. But anyway, we will deal with that when time comes. Again on page 4, under 6.4.5, you are saying, the accountability of national government in respect of balancing competing rights of citizens within the Republic of Africa. The two operative words, accountability and balancing competing rights. I wonder if you can please address us so that we begin to understand how do you balance these competing rights in terms of the citizens of this country. Page 5, under comments on the Amendment Bill, paragraph 10, you are raising quite interesting issues there. I'm not going to read all in because it's a question of time. I want you to address us on this again, looking also in terms of the Constitution, go back to Section 25, Subsection 4AB, Subsection 5, and Subsection 7. In particular, if you look at Subsection 7, again, it talks about, I'll just read the last one, or to equitable redress, underline equitable redress. Just tell us, how do you think that the government will deal the situation? If, of course, you are talking about it, seriously consider why it is intended that exclusion of large category of people. Which category of people that we are referring to here? I'm raising in the sense that all research that has been done so far has confirmed that in essence, the majority of South Africans, they don't own land. The land is owned by the minority referred to as, in particular, the white commercial farmers. 87% common cry, isn't it? 80%. 80% is owned by how many? By about 200 people. As opposed to 47 million citizens of this country. 47 billion of this country. Only 200 are owning the whole country. The whole country, in fact. You know? The majority of South Africans then own nothing. Absolutely zero. You know? Page 6, again, paragraph 11. You are raising the unconstitutionality of this particular issue. I'm not going to repeat, but I think even this paragraph also must go back to the reference I've made to subsection 4A, B, and 5 and 7. I'm not going to dwell much on that particular one because it's self-explanatory in terms of what is referred there. Then page 7, paragraph 15.2. Just clarify for me, I'm trying to read that. English is not my first, or my mother tongue. It's not my mother tongue. I'm trying to get what they're trying to say here, but I don't really understand much. But let me assume that the way I understand it, it's on the basis of those that own land, also in terms of the commercial farmers in brackets, they also need assistance. In terms of, let me say I understand that quite your question. How do you then suggest the government to deal with the situation of those who have got land till their execution and they need an urgent assistance in terms of the, what do you call it now? The question of the sustainability, that they sustain the farms that they've received from government, of course, and also we have got the willing sellers. Sometimes the, what you call the going concerns, those might be willing to sell their tractors, their houses, and their maybe their wives, for that matter, you know. How do you think that the government should assist in terms of acquiring that? Because I believe that I'm not sure that at this stage that you're only allowed to buy a land, not the movable property, you know, the immovable one. How to suggest that the government should deal with that situation? How do you also address the issue of the present white commercial farmers in terms of assisting those that are coming new in the sector, per se? I want also to address us on that one. Maybe let me quickly go to NAFU in terms of their revolutionary, you know, that they are going to revolutionize this country. I know about Ronyan Yan Cinema, and Bob and I was on there. NAFU, you on your. I was just talking to my. Ngozi. That I'm sure the date is 19, yeah, it's 20 today, eh? Or 21st. Okay. Yeah. And also, on paragraph 3. Well, I think that, you know, you talk about apologetic tendencies. What are these tendencies that you're referring to? So that we get to understand where you are coming from, where you want us to be. These tendencies that you are referring, that we, as colleagues, yeah, we have got these tendencies ourselves. I'm not talking about the functionaries. They've got nothing to do with this. It's ourselves, you know. Those they're supposed to implement, and sometimes they're messing us around, you know, in terms of the implementation processes. To affirm previously disadvantaged communities so that we get to understand, so that we move with you in terms of the pace and such. Now, on paragraph 9, enough, we are talking about this section 10, subsection 1B, whatever. You are saying we noted that while the debate is... Oh, the resistance, let's start there, that resistance. Is it resistance in terms of your interaction? Because we have not seen much from maybe my side. I've not seen any much resistance in terms of this particular section referred to. Maybe in terms of your interaction with your colleagues there and your presidency there. There are a number of interactions. That maybe you have discovered that there's this resistance, you know. Can maybe just explain to us this resistance that you are referring to here, in terms of referring to that one. You refer in 10 to the all legal safeguards inbuilt in the Act of 75. I'm sure you are referring to expropriation. I wonder if you can, because see, if you read that paragraph, NAFU, the reading of this paragraph, to me, it may mean that it seems to me you're really happy with the Act of that 75. Though I think it's a serious problem in terms of that Act. That is why the Expropriation Bill was built up by Public Works to try to address this particular Act. But you are saying, yeah, that there are certain safeguards that are protected in that Act. Maybe you can a little bit address us in terms of your understanding of that one. The last issue for now, which is on paragraph 13. You are talking about why do we support this bill? You know, it's leave with reservations of some sort. The challenge will remain in defense of the government to resource the Department of Agriculture and Land Affairs. I'm sure it's through your experience that you feel that in this bill, do you think that in this bill, if it's implemented or enacted in its same form, that the department, in your view, won't be able to implement this Act? Is that what you are saying in this paragraph? Because you see, further down, you talk about this, which I agree, this Maputo Protocol, which is talk about 10%, it's not even 7%. Talk about 17% of GDP, but of course, you have reduced that. Talk about the protocol, then at the end, you said, no, let's not deal with 10%, let's deal with 7%. I just want to get your view in terms of that, so that you get to understand in terms of, you see, where you are really coming from. Thanks, Chair.
Well, welcome, Minister. We were listening to NAFU and the Institute for Constitutional Labor Studies. Yeah. My dear, let's arrange the package for the Minister. Honorable Thompson?
Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
Chair, I thought, and I'm basing my talk to the two gentlemen, I thought that this bill is going to partly assist us with the issue of land reform. And in our view as government, we think that land reform is one of the best tools that we have chosen as government to address the imbalances of the past. In fact, the best peaceful tool, not just a tool, a peaceful one. Now, my question is just simple. I would want the two gentlemen to then assist us or advise us. What then are the best tools? Do they see fit to address the imbalances of the past? Thanks.
Honorable Fanika.
Thank you, Chair. Just a question to Mr. Kriya. In terms of this paragraph 15.2, where he says that people, persons who have no land or have no limited access to land are excluded, where does he read that in? Because I'm trying to find it here in the bill, but is that a deduction that he makes, that there's a conclusion? I do not find it explicitly said in such words, because the minister does have a discretion in how to apply the contents of this act. So that's basically my question. But just a general comment on the 80% land use. If you take any country in the world and you single out agriculture, you find that the minority owns the majority of the area because of the area of it. And in every country in the world, the majority of people do not own. They usually lease. So it's, even in South Africa. But here it is distorted in terms of the rest, and I agree with you. But don't single out agriculture. We've got, say, 200,000 farms in South Africa. If reform is so successful that 200 new black farmers come in, a black minority will then own South Africa. You follow? In terms of the total population. So that's the point that I'm taking. It's not, we can play around with figures, but it's not so clear that minority, who is that minority? And the question of food security comes to fore. But anyway, the question is to Mr. Kriya and to NAFU, basically. Yes, we have acts in place, and it's good that we now see that the wheel is round and not square.
Thank you, Chairperson. thank you to the presenter for your presentation. And then I'm having one question for each of you. The first question is directed to the Institute for Constitutional and Labor Law Studies. As this institute that studies, you know, constitutional issues and the labor laws or act and so on, I do hope that you are an institute that is able to read between the lines to avoid situations that maybe might lead some of us to the Constitutional Court. What proposals do you have to bring before us to ensure that some of these issues, you know, are being dealt with? Because I do hope that the fact that you're able to come and present here is that you also want to be of assistance. So you're able to read between the lines, and then what proposals are you having in this aspect? The question of balancing has been running throughout with the colleagues. How would you propose that we balance the previously 87% against the 13-1? And then the second one goes to NAFU. NAFU are cancer, your presentation. In your presentation, well, you really, some of the issues have been mentioned by my colleague, you know, that we apologetic and so on. But you made a proposal, and this proposal is that in the budget should not be raised by 7%. And then one would like to know, should be raised maybe up to 7% and not more than that, if I heard you properly. Or agakho kwabuthi.
7%
now.
Now.
Okay. Okay. All right. Maybe adding to that, Rekako Pela Ho Kwakore, 7% and now, e informa, e. And then, secondly, we would definitely appreciate if they do have other factors which might contribute, which might assist us as the government, you know, to close the flaws and gaps that are available now. Inkomo Samoshto. Oh, Chapters, I'm sorry. I had not completed them. You for being short. Enough. There is the question. There are problems that we have met as when trying to address the land reform, and maybe you might be aware of some of those provinces. You know, are those areas which are not marked, those beneficiaries which cannot be traced. You know, I think we definitely need to be assisted here. Maybe the department may can also assist us in taking, because some of those beneficiaries which cannot be traced, maybe they are in jail, or some of them are deceased, or some of them are, you know, maybe we need to verify for us to be able to say some of these beneficiaries cannot be traced. Are they still alive, or what is happening to them? And those areas which were not marked, you know, that are not demographics, you know, how much have we done on those ones? You know, because that is one area which is delaying the question of addressing the land reform. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay. No, Mr. Kruger, I think as you preface your presentation, the angle that you take is more on the constitutionality of the bill. Now, in your presentation, you also make reference to the fact that this bill targets the historically disadvantaged persons, and in your view, the exclusion of the minority groups then renders the bill unconstitutional. Just to summarize what I think I've heard from you. But I want you to give me a constitutional interpretation of the following clauses. Section 9(2) of the Constitution, on equality, says equality includes the full and equal enjoyment of all rights and freedoms. To promote the achievement of equality, legislative and other measures designed to protect or advance persons or categories of persons disadvantaged by unfair discrimination may be taken. The next section that I want you to locate this bill into in terms of constitutional analysis is section 25, which talks about, in fact, section 25, subsection 4, which says, for the purpose of this section, the public interest includes the nation's commitment to land reform and to reforms to bring about equitable access to all South Africa's natural resources. And 2, subsection 5, which says, the state must take reasonable legislative and other measures within its available resources to foster conditions which enable citizens to gain access to land on an equitable basis. Here, the context is that you've got a disequilibrium in terms of land ownership. the people that you refer to as the minorities own, you know, more than 80% of the land, and the Constitution enjoins us to pass legislation which ensures that access to land is effected on an equitable basis. So I want you to do an analysis of these clauses in the context of this bill, because in your view this bill is unconstitutional. And the last provision is the one that Honorable referred to, Section 7 as well. Subsection 7, 25 Subsection 7. So if you can respond to the comments that I've made. We'll start with you and then Nafu. There's coffee there. We won't have a tea break. We're not doing well in terms of time, so if you want coffee, just go and grab it. But otherwise, let's proceed.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mr. Abrams is not here, and it's a pity he's probably just outside getting some coffee, but I would like to react to his appeal, and I'd like to react to what he has said. And I'd like to place in context what has been said here today from our side, given also the... Oh, there's Mr. Abrams now. I'm so glad he's here. Mr. Abrams, thank you very much for your appeal made to the ears of a young man. Let me firstly say, I agree with you, we're all South Africans. And I agree with you that we all South Africans, irrespective of race and colour, and I totally agree with that, and we as an institute support that. We as an institute, and I thought I'd try to make it clear, and I'd like to say that to the committee here, we support land reform. We are not against land reform, but land reform measures must pass to the constitutional muster. If it doesn't pass that, then the institute will react thereto and will use its use the opportunity created by Parliament and the committee to point out to the committee and the lawmakers of South Africa where we think potential unconstitutionality can arise. I agree with a lot of what Mr. Motlala has said here, apart from the revolutionary strategies that he intends to try to get off the ground. I don't think that's constitutional, and I hope he sees it. Chairperson, Mr. Abrams, to each on to what you have said. You said that you're an Indian. You didn't want to be classified as such, and I'd like to use that as a great example as to why we say this bill might be potentially unconstitutional. And let me firstly say, we're not saying it's unconstitutional. We're saying it might potentially be unconstitutional. So we're acting on something that might happen in the future. And we're saying to you as the lawmakers of South Africa, look for what we are saying here. So the current act that stands makes doesn't differentiate between race and colour and all. Any person of any creed under the current act, if I understand it correctly, it can approach the minister for assistance with regards to land and provision of everything that stands in the current act. What you are doing now is you are limiting that scope and you are placing it squarely into the cadre of historically disadvantaged. Now, what are we to do from the side of an institute that looks at the constitutionality? You are limiting a right that currently stands, if this bill goes through, currently is to be grasped by any person currently in South Africa. You are limiting that now to historically disadvantaged persons. And we're saying that that potentially might be unconstitutional. Why do we say that? We say that in future, if this is made law, we all know and you all know how hard it is to change law, having come through the system of apartheid. You know how hard it is to change the law. And if this becomes law, and you've limited this now to historically disadvantaged persons, then potentially in 15 or 20 years' time, other people that now fall within the previously advantaged class might become disadvantaged under this act. And that's an important consideration for you to look at. I'm not saying that land reform is something that should not be looked at all. I think it's something that must be embraced. And I agree with what you've said, a lot with what you've said, but there must be, the constitutionality of it must be above, must pass all scrutiny. So, Mr. Abrams, to answer your first question, of course the Institute see the need for land reform. Of course we see it, but it must be constitutional. Secondly, I think you referred to reasonableness. What do we suggest reasonable steps are to secure, to foster conditions where land can be secured? I think the reasonableness, what this act in essence does, it's taking an act and it's making it, it's placing it in a new cadre of land reform legislation. And to my view, it's limiting rights. So if you look at the limitation of rights, I think I think it must be rational. I think the constitution is clear on that. The limitation must be reasonable and justifiable in an open and democratic society. And what we're saying is that we're not saying that as yet it is, but it might potentially be not be rational in the future. So the reasonableness. Let me say this. I think to cut to the chase, what cannot be done under the Act as it stands or as it proposed to stand, or if the clause of historically disadvantaged persons are not brought into the proposed bill, why can the objectives of land reform not be and not be met? Why must that be brought in? Surely the minister has the discretion, and these officials have the discretion to look at each and every application that comes through. Why does it have to stand in the new bill that historically disadvantaged persons can get the benefits of this act? And I think that's the crux of the matter. And if that is taken out, I think a lot of what of our concerns are addressed. Because we're looking at, as I've said a number of times, the possibility in future of people that might be disadvantaged. Mr. Abrams, you referred to Section 1A that has been taken out. I wasn't aware of that, and I didn't see any publication in any gazette to that effect. I reacted to the previous one, and can I just request as to whether, apart from that has been taken out, whether any other amendments to that document? I'm not sure, and I'd be happy to. But I think if that's the only thing, then the remainder of our comments are valid with regards to that document.
No, I'll arrange you a copy.
Thank you. Thank you, Chief. Mr. Abrams, thank you. Mr. Abrams, one of your questions, I think that's come out as well, is what is the situation with regards to movable property has now been bought, and how are farmers to be assisted if movable property is also not made available for these persons to farm? And I agree with you. I think it should be done. But I think it should be, the provision with regards to movable property should be placed in context. Because at the current stage, any movable property can be acquired by the minister. And I'm not saying, what I'm saying is it must be qualified. It must be movable property for purposes of land reform objectives then. But movable property at this stage is a very, very broad term. And I agree with you that certainly farmers that are impaired must be helped with movable property as well. But I think then, to answer your question, the movable property clause should be qualified and defined in the bill as it stands. And I think that relates to the going concern question as well. I hope I attended to your questions thoroughly. Advocate Olumisa, or Member Olumisa, asked, what are minority groups? Well, I think it's a valid question, and I think that for purposes of our discussion today, minority groups are, at this stage, for purposes of what we're doing here, is persons that don't fall within the previously disadvantaged term that you're bringing out now in this legislation. I think so. And certainly that is white people. That is so. And it's a valid question. But why...
if you say minority groups, the response will be more sympathetic, you know.
possibly, yes, to give you the ear, Mr. Olumisa, as the lawmaker, to say to you that not look through the glass of race, and the glasses of race, but maybe minority will reach your ear and you will hear what I have to say to you today. Then your question was, how do we propose that land reform be facilitated? What are we proposing that land reform now, that previously advantaged persons should also have the benefits of land reform? I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is, why exclude them now when in future they can? That there is a situation, Mr. Olumisa, although you might not recognize that now, where you may one day wake up and white people are poorer than black people, and white people can also have the need to, in terms of this legislation, apply to the minister for provision of land and assistance. And if this act says, well, previously disadvantaged persons, then that person will not have equitable access to the laws of South Africa. And the question is, will that be constitutional at that stage?
I
beg your pardon? Who knows? Maybe you can tell me. But so at this stage, I think I agree with you, and I agree with you that land reform should be done. And at this stage, previously disadvantaged people must have access to land. I just want to again underline that. Your question is, how do we think that farms will work if movable property is not provided? And I think that I've answered that question with regard. Then, Mr. Dlali, your sideways remark with regards to the non-partisan status of the institute. I'd like to. Thanks for the question. It's a separate entity, as you know, but the legal entity is a separate entity. It is non-partisan, even although it's an initiative of solidarity. And that's why I can't sue Mr. Olumisa. If of course he did something wrong, I can't sue you. Then, paragraph 6.1 of my... I beg your pardon? I said to you last time that there are a number of people that support us internationally and nationally, and I think there's also a question of confidentiality, and I think you probably acknowledge that. But thanks for the question. Paragraph 6.1. Sorry, 6.3. I think you said, please address us on equitable access to land. I agree that there must be equitable access to land, of course. But the measures put into place to do that must be constitutional and must not bring into being a system that might bring about new discrimination. And that is what we are alerting you to today. So yes, there must be equitable access to land. It's a very difficult concept, but that is in short what we say on that score. And then I think you requested us as to what do we say about accountability and balancing. Well, I think there must be national government is in a position that that it is now, and that it has a very responsible position. It must balance rights even of white people. Those potential rights or the rights of white people and also must be balanced as the rights of previously disadvantaged people, black, coloured, African, must be balanced. And what we're saying is even the fact that this act now limits, the proposed bill limits the act that currently stands, we're saying that Parliament must look at whether that the scales that you are, the scales that you are, what you are doing now is you're placing a new bill, you're taking the old act and you're giving it a new blazer, and you must balance what you're doing now against the Constitution. And that is why the government is accountable to the Constitution and the supremacy of the Constitution. So that is the way I understand accountability and balancing. Paragraph 10, you said address us on paragraph 10, and then you referred to section 7 of section sub 7 of section 25. Sorry, I just got the question. What is our proposals? Thank you. What is our proposals with regards to land reform? How do we suggest it's done? Well, I think this bill is it's a very tough job that you have, without a doubt. And I'm not here to try to take that job and say it's not difficult. It is difficult. What we're saying is this current bill, look at what we've said with regards to previously disadvantaged, the limitation, and whether it's rational or not, and look at whether the same objectives cannot be achieved if that limitation is not brought into the current act. If the answer to that is yes, the same objectives can be achieved, then why not altogether bypass a situation where in future people who are not so-called previously disadvantaged cannot also have access to the benefits of this legislation merely by dint of their skin. So yes, I think our suggestion is take this bill and look at that clause and look at qualifying the movable some of the stipulations in this bill, and I think it is on the right track. But at this stage, we're pointing out the potential unconstitutionality of this bill. And I think you also ask why is it potentially unconstitutional? And I think I've answered that. We're not saying it's unconstitutional. We're saying it might potentially be, because you're limiting a right of a person not falling within the previously disadvantaged group. And in future, and even now, I think if one really thinks about it, although it's very difficult, that there are people from the white groupings and the minority groupings that are also in a position to qualify for the benefits of the act as it currently stands. And I think that's something that one must look at, and one must responsibly as government also look at that possibility in the future. And then, well, to answer your question with regards to the movable assets, I think I've answered that. I think qualify it for purposes of land reform, because as it currently stands, it is open to, with greatest of respect, it is open to abuse, because movable property is a very, very wide, it's anything that moves. And it might not be even relative to land reform purposes and assisting farmers or new commercial farmers. So I think qualify, Mr. Lolly. Then I hope I answered your questions correctly. I don't have a name, but the comment was, I thought this bill will assist us in addressing the imbalances of the past. Then assist or advise us, what other tools do we suggest? Well, I think that's correct. It's a valid question. We're not here to simply criticize, but I think looking at the bill as it currently stands and making the amendments to the bill in its current form to eradicate potential unconstitutionality thereof, and working from that, that will be our proposal. So to along the lines of what this act envisages to deal with land reform. Then Mr. van die Kerk's question, that paragraph, I see Mr. Glali also had difficulty with that. Maybe it wasn't, as English isn't also not my first language. And although the colonialists did a lot to contribute to our current situation, let me try to just answer that and say, refers to the old act, or the current act, the other act, refers to Section 10.2 of the current act as it stands, saying, for the purposes of subsection 1, persons who may be granted an advance or a subsidy are sub A, persons who have no land or have limited access to land and who wish to gain access to land or to additional land. So it jumps to the old act there, and then the very next paragraph goes to the proposed bill. So it stands in, that is a reference to the old act, so, or the current act, and it stands there, if I understand you correctly. Yes, that reference is verbatim quoted from the current act, section 10.2a. I hope that clarifies. Then
explicitly, that's the point. That's a conclusion that you.
Well, it's quoted verbatim from sub A. But if we're not by any measure trying to mislead the committee at all. So if that is a deduction, I hope it's a valid one. Then please proceed, Mr. Cook. I thought you were going to say he's got a Bernard bus or something, but alright, thanks for your question, Nkuna, Mrs. Nkuna, thank you very much. We're an institute that deals with the Constitution, and I hope we can read between the lines, and how do we suggest that we assist you, and I hope I've clarified that we're not here to throw a to stop what is happening. We're here to make sure, or try to make sure, that it's constitutional, and I've tried to say that what we think should be done to the bill in its current form. Although we say in the end that it should not go through as a whole, I think we feel very strongly with regards to the previously disadvantaged clause, and also the fact that if you're talking about land reform, then this bill in its current form may also, with indicator of historically disadvantaged persons, potentially have a negative effect for a person that falls within previously disadvantaged. Whereas a person who already has land can also apply for further assistance or land, and I think that's something to be looked at, because that person might potentially take the place of someone who has no land at all. So that's a suggestion from our side. So we're hoping our comments with regards to assistance helps the committee in dealing with the bill forthwith. Mr. Chair, thank you very much. Your question, I hope I clarified that we're not saying that it's constitutional, and I regret that that position might have come across. We're saying it. Please look at what the potential unconstitutionality of the current bill might be in future, because you are government and foresight is very important. You asked me for the constitutional interpretation of section 9(2) with regards to equality. Mr. Chair, yes. Equality includes the full and equal enjoyment of all rights and freedoms. To promote the achievement of equality, legislative and other measures designed to protect or advance persons or categories of persons disadvantaged by unfair discrimination may be taken. That is indeed so. It may be taken, but it be subject to rationality, because it's a limitation. If I might refer you to some of the comments have been made by some writers. I think the court case of Hoxton versus Lane, I don't know if you're familiar with that, also brought into being a number of steps that have to be followed to look at whether this differentiation, because this bill, if it goes through, will differentiate between previously disadvantaged and previously advantaged persons. So one must look at whether the differentiation amounts to discrimination, and if it does amount to discrimination, whether that discrimination is fair, whether it is rational and reasonable in an open and democratic society. So it's a right that must pass certain tests that have been laid down by the Constitution. So yes, rights can be limited to ensure equitable access to land, but it also is a right that must be, or it's an act that must be qualified. And I think the tests have been laid down by the Constitution, and what we're saying is look at whether the exclusion from people, as the Act currently excludes no one. This exclusion that the new bill proposes must pass the constitutional muster, and it must, the committee must be able to say that yes, we're limiting the right of persons falling outside of the category of previously disadvantaged, and is this limitation reasonable and justifiable? So that is my comment on that. The next section you referred me to is section 25(4). Of the Act. For the purposes of this section, the public interest includes the nation's commitment to land reform and to reforms to bring about equitable access to all South Africa's natural resources. And I think, if I may so forward as to say, I know what sparked this line of questioning. It's because of the, I hope I've knocked a dent into that we are totally opposed to the concept of land reform. We are not. And of course, equitable access to all South Africa's natural resources is a valid objective, but
must pass constitutional muster. Then he also referred me to section 25(7), and that deals with equitable redress. I think it is so that equitable redress is necessary, but once again, it must be guarded against that if any limitation to rights are brought into being, the limitation must be rational and justifiable, and must not create a situation where in future a new discrimination is brought about. Mr. Chair, I hope I answered those questions correctly. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Kruger. Nafu?
Chairperson, you must not be surprised we have the second economy.
But you have a nice laptop.
No, it was borrowed this morning at the hotel. And I'm not lying.
So it's a first economy hotel.
Advocates here, so we decided let's pretend we are first economy. The first question that we will deal with, but before I say so, Chairperson, thank you very much for affording us the opportunity to respond to the questions. I will speak as a farmer, not as an expert. But I would appreciate if those who are not farmers should not necessarily speak on our behalf. On the land prices, historically, we all know that agricultural land were not treated like the commercial land or land in town or so on. It's a fact. All of a sudden, the agricultural land is now being treated in terms of the market considerations. And we are not suggesting that it should not, but that is what was happening. We are also aware of the fact, Chair, that there is currently a court case that is in the Constitutional Court. I know that in Mpumalanga, where I come from, there were these problems in Butler of exactly what I'm talking about in terms of these land prices. The challenge is, Judge Caldenay said that you can't say that the price is higher because based on you know there is no evaluation science. The evaluation may mean, you know, whatever different. The fact of the matter is, and that is a fact, is that farmers are business people as well. And we are not lying when we say that all of a sudden the prices of the land on farms have gone up. Because we don't have a mechanism to manage that. And that is why I made a point in this house to say that if we took those laws and just brush this thing, would be in a position to manage those things. So we are not able to, I mean, it was never called for in South Africa where a hectare per land would be cost, would actually come to 50,000 per hectare. But never like that. So I think that we would wait for the Constitutional Court to apply its mind on this matter. That is on land prices. But I know that the Inkosi was saying, how do we determine? With your permission, I'm not going to go further than what I said there.
But yes, because the landowners are denying that they are raising the prices of land exorbitantly.
No, thank you. the issue that I was trying to explain, Chair, is that in the past, pre-1994, especially where I come from, I would buy a farm for 300 rand per hectare. Now, where I come from today, especially in Komatipoort area, I cannot buy a land for 300 hectares. It's something in the order of between 20 to 50,000, sometimes up to 100,000 per hectare. There are a lot of things involved in here, and I don't want to speak on behalf of others. All what I'm saying is, for black farmers to enter the mainstream of agricultural sector, there need to be a balance. I also accept the fact that our colleagues are business people, and I'm not here to bash them, because we are one. So we need to make sure that this balance is achieved as quickly as possible, because clearly even the government cannot afford these prices. But the issue at point that I cannot really tell you how we are going to deal with it is, are we saying that farmers are not business people? Why should the price of land not be the same as the price of land in Cape Town? What is the mechanism that would regulate land prices? Because clearly, my union have to act in a fair manner towards our colleague. Because clearly, we need to reconcile these processes so that there is a very serious balance. What we cannot accept is the tendency to then explode these prices, in which majority of South Africans would not therefore qualify to buy or to acquire such property. It is a problem. That is why government has got this case in the Constitutional Court. If I was a lawyer, maybe I would know better how to talk about this. On the matter of apologetic tendency, we have got to know that the democratic government started in 1994. But we also have to understand what was happening pre-1994. We must also acknowledge fairly that farmers that look like me have never been subsidized by the state. The former Minister of Agriculture, Dr. Van Niekerk, will know about this. I wasn't mentioning that we should have taken the very same policies and dust them and continue for fun. Because clearly I don't think we should be talking about this today. I was serious about it. I'm saying, because of the Constitution and because of the new dispensation, black farmers have never enjoyed any subsidies at all. At all. And I think that is that there is a level of unfairness here. Only 2 weeks ago, and for the very first time, we were in Geneva. And I think the success that we brought in South Africa was the fact that in the green box of the WTO, now we can be subsidized. Now, we would like to argue, and we will argue as we answer your questions. So I'm saying the apologetic tendencies of government is based on what I'm saying. Now, in the first place, the cut-off date, for example, for the claims our farmers maintain is unreasonable. Our farmers maintain the cut-off date of restitution is unreasonable because we are talking of December 1998. In Japan, it went forever, more than 50 years. And many other countries, it went more than that. Why only 1995 to 1998? So this is apologetic tendencies I'm referring to. Land dispersion went on for a long time, and we know that dispossession happened before the date of inception, and also some people were not
able to lodge claims at that cut-off date. Now, considering what apartheid have done, and I don't want to go 50 years back, because we must look forward. Our people have not been to school. Our people are not as literate as we would want them to be. The radios that you may have published this thing, really we shouldn't have closed this thing. Secondly, Chair, the Land Summit made some telling recommendations, and we do not think that our lawmakers have reflected on this. The fact that these amendments to the expropriation bill are, and to this bill, are only being discussed now is a testimony to this. In fact, this bill should have been discussed 10 years ago. That's our view. Now, with regard to resistance to the bill or expropriation, whatever, we know that there has been a lot of resistance and submissions against the proposed expropriation bill have been made. And we know that other people misunderstand exactly what this bill is trying to achieve. And we know that others, even here, want to speak on our behalf. And we are clearly not very happy with that. We are saying that in terms of the resolution taken in Polokwane 2008, those resolutions addresses some of the issues that are being raised here. We think that all farmers, black and white, must shape their own future together with the department and the minister. And we know that indeed this resistance must be defeated, and must be defeated today. We can't afford, Comrade Chair, this sophisticated way of doing things, while we know that the undercurrent, the somewhere under the table, is in fact to keep the status quo. We can't continue that way. We can't bring the expertise that is against transformation. We can't. And I even made mention of the example of the North. People that think that they are so knowledgeable, and yet they actually use their own expertise and knowledge to be against transformation, must not be allowed to succeed, must not. The farmers must talk and say, this is what we want, as they have done in Polokwane 2008. Safeguards. What are the safeguards? Sorry? No, I've never said so. I've never said Polokwane farmers. No, I've never said Polokwane farmer. I have said that we had a summit in Polokwane. That's why I'm quoting. Even in my presentation, I mentioned that, in which black and white farmers and yellow farmers, if we have, met to say this is our future. Not. Oh, okay. All right. But that, maybe I must be very clear. That is the second Polokwane then.
That's where revolutions have occurred.
Yeah. That is the second Polokwane. Now, you see now, I think, So, the other question is about the safeguard. You know, I must really say that there is much safeguards in what we are doing. Unless and until such time that we can change our attitudes in general, not to exploit the situation we find ourselves in. The president of Austria called South Africa a project. And why does he call us a project? We are a country that must try and live together. So the international community is looking at us.
So the safeguard in the Constitution is there. Honorable Member Dlali was quoting it. Honorable Member Nkosi Olomisa was also quoting it. And these are the safeguards in terms of the property clause. Section 25 to 9. These are safeguards and the Bill of Rights. I do not know. And what we are discussing is enshrined in the Constitution to say that the more than, and I don't want to hurt anybody, but it is true that more than 100 years of exclusion and deprivation cannot be left to bear just because some of us cannot argue effectively. I mean, why would even the former president de Klerk stand here and unban the ANC? Because he could see that we were on our own. The world don't care that this little fight that we have. I am shocked that other people could still continue to say this is wrong. The world is not waiting for us. It's not. And you are busy killing agriculture because some of you people are not farmers. Can't come here and tell farmers what must happen and what must not. We must change this image of the farm of agriculture in South Africa, and the lawmakers must help us to do that. And I think this bill is the best we have ever seen. Please, help us to try. The farmers want to sell. They don't want to come here and make the laws. But this one is the best. Now, so, I really, with regard to resourcing the department, we are of the view that if the objects of the bill are to be achieved, the current budget will have to be increased immediately. I have said that we have made mistakes, and I hope that my mentioning that should be understood in the following context. That over the last 12 years, the budget of the department has not been very good. And yet, we have continued to bash the department by saying that they cannot really, they don't have sufficient capacity to implement. But when people are properly resourced, they will go in the market and get people so that they can actually correct their own capacity. I can't believe that the Department of Agriculture's budget should be somewhere in the order of 2.5 billion. I can't believe, for example, that the budget in the Department of Agriculture in Mpumalanga must be 700 billion. I can't believe that. How do you do the job? So we want to argue and say, really, really, the government and parliament have not taken this department very seriously. And it hurt us because we were never subsidized. When we are given mere 3 million, it costs hullabaloo in South Africa. A mere 3 million for NAFO to try and sort itself. What do you call that? I call it apartheid. I don't know what you call it. No. I call it racism. Sorry. So really, I say we are arguing that The resources must be brought in. Someone must pay in. We can't have, I know that the, I don't want to bring departments here, but if we have 40 billion of a certain department and we have only 6 billion for land and agriculture, that means we are not in business. That means commercial farmers will never come right because we don't even have a plan for them. And I am a commercial farmer. We are not even talking about small-scale farmers. Nothing. It's zero. So I'm saying it must change. I'm saying we must change this thing. And as I know that Maputo Protocol is 10%. All what we are arguing today, I say, meet, what is this? In November, at least put in 7% so that they are capable civil servants in this department. And there are many South Africans, black and white, outside that can be brought in this department to capacitate the department to do the job.
can't come here and talk. Now, missing beneficiaries and unmarked areas and so on.
So you are wrapping up, Mr. Madala?
I'm going to wrap up very quickly. Now, this one, the department can respond because we don't have answers for this. Thank you very much, very, very much. And those who resist change, you have seen them. Thank you. Okay. Sorry, Chairperson, on the revolution. Sorry, on the small revolution, I must explain. I know that this comrade, I don't know his name.
Kriya.
Yeah. He commented. I don't know why did he comment on my small revolution. But let me tell you, in South Africa, and I was trying to explain, Honorable Chair, for you to be taken serious, I must make a call for all the farmers, and I must go to my colleagues and say, let us go to the union building, 10 million of us, or 5 million, or 1,000, whatever, and go and do it. We South African farmers have not done that yet, except the mill farmers in the past. For you to be taken serious, our people in communities would go to Pretoria Station and bend trains. For you to be taken serious, our people will go and protest in various municipal areas. But that costs the economy a lot of money. And I think we are very reasonable. And I'm saying, please let us not be pushed to that level where we will take our tractors and come to this parliament, where we will take our buggies. You know, if you want to see how farmers can get angry, please, we don't want to go there. We want to support the government, we want to support our minister, we want to support our civil servants, we want to change in terms of the spirit of Polokwane too, if you want. So please, the bill, in my view, should be supported.
No, don't respond to people who are not speaking with
Chairperson, in this country there are laws. We will not just go to unit building we will apply. We will apply. And I don't know when I say we will fill the tractors in Pretoria, you will never go to work for 10 days.
No, we want to see tractors here in Parliament. thank you very much. Without any waste of time, Annalise, then after Annalise, Mr. Lambsden, you will then follow. Okay, thank you, Mr. Kruger. Thanks, Nafu. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. You can start, Annalise.
Chairperson, thank you very much for the opportunity. It's always difficult to have to speak after Mr. Matlala because he expresses himself very well when he speaks fearlessly. And what he says often makes a lot of sense, so I'm in a difficult position. Chairperson, land reform is no more just a question of equity. It has actually become of practical importance. Because of the declining white population and the declining number of farmers, as well as the food price crisis and the international food security crisis that we have, it has become of urgent importance that we have, that we establish successful black farmers in this country. I've seen a graph recently of what the white population looks like now. And whereas you normally have a population that looks like a pyramid, the white population in this country now looks like a ball, in the sense that there are a lot of middle-aged people, but the young people have gone. So apart from anything else, apart from it being a matter of equity, it is of critical importance that we have a class of successful new black farmers in this country. And AfriSA believes that the chances of black farmers to be successful will be enhanced if they are able, if the state is able to acquire going concerns and movable assets and shares in existing enterprises on their behalf, rather than just making land available to them, as is the case presently. So we support that aspect of the bill. But we are in a difficult position, Chair, and it's also a bit difficult to explain, because I probably wouldn't even have been before this committee today had it not been for the expropriation debate taking place in another committee. Because that whole debate has raised a lot of fears in the farming community. And because of those fears, there's also now a fear that by extending the powers of the minister in this particular bill to acquire movables and going concerns and shares in businesses, the power to expropriate is also extended. And because of the serious concerns that AgriSA has around the bill that may not be before Parliament any longer. We hear lots of rumours, but there's been no formal announcement on it. Farmers are worried that if that is the case, if the expropriation provisions in the bill are retained and are actually expanded, that it may end up in a situation where current landowners are expropriated under conditions that are quite unfavourable for them. And that is why we are raising this issue. The other concern that we have, Chair, is the management of the movable assets in the interim period, because the way that we understand it, the state will acquire the movable assets, but it will not necessarily be immediately transferred to the beneficiaries. So there will be an interim period, and it's much easier for movable assets to be damaged or get lost than what the case is with immovable assets, land. And we think that it is quite important that there should be some measure in place to make sure that those assets are properly cared for in that interim period. So we propose that mechanisms be built into the bill, or if necessary, into regulations in order to protect the movable assets from being sold off or damaged in this period, so that the beneficiaries can get the full benefit when it is eventually transferred to them. Then also, Chair, just as a matter of principle, we AgriSA is in favour of the proactive land acquisition and the new land and agrarian reform strategy, and we understand that the state will be acquiring land in the name of the state. But we don't feel that the state, we feel that the state should not in the long term be a large landowner. So it is important that the land and the assets that are acquired be transferred to the beneficiaries as soon as possible. That once they have been trained and they are in a position to take possession of the land and the assets, that they be allowed to do so as quickly as possible. Chair, and then we do feel, and there's been questions from some of the members to the other presenters, that what other mechanisms exist to do land reform. If we say that we're not in favour of expropriation for redistribution purposes, then what are the mechanisms? We feel that the law program is a very good program and has a lot of potential. We feel that the area-based planning and the area-based approach to land reform, which is now being implemented by DLA, the strategic partnerships that are entered into with organized agriculture, has a lot of potential to realize the objective of land reform. And if you look at the existing legislation, there is the power, the minister has the power to expropriate in terms of the Restitution Act, in terms of Labor Tenants Act, in terms of ESTA. Minister of Housing, I think, also has powers to expropriate in terms of the Housing Act. So there is a lot of scope for land reform and even for using expropriation in those specific circumstances. But AgriSA feels that in the case of redistribution, we really prefer the approach of strategic partnerships on the basis of area-based planning in taking land reform forward rather than expropriation. Thank you, Chief.
Thanks, Ms. Crosby. Mr. Lumsden?
Thanks very much, Chairman. Minister and members of the Portfolio Committee, everyone who's here today. I'm not sure if I feel too comfortable. People looking at the back of my head, but maybe the minister will imagine I've got some sense. If I'm bald, I'm old enough to know something. You're listening. Oh, good. I just come here today on my own behalf, and I'm just hoping that you'll all listen to what I have to say. Actually, I'm really begging you to listen. I'm in a rather probably unique situation here at this meeting. I was involved in the Zimbabwe land situation. My dad was born in this country. He was a really tough man. When I say tough, I mean tough. I don't want to be a dishonor my father, but he grew up in an agricultural situation here. He moved to Zimbabwe. He purchased land. He farmed. I was brought up on a farm. He was in the situation, and I'm sure some of you will understand, where he was affected by circumstances in those days. This was quite a long time back, and my dad died many years ago. And he was affected by the situation in the day, which made him have a particular kind of opinion and a view of agriculture and the people and politics of the day. And I just want to explain this to you just so that you'll get some sort of a feeling for what I'm saying. You know, my personal background has really nothing to do with this, but it might just enable me to get across what I'm going to say just now about this particular bill. And I think it's really important to see it from this particular perspective. What happened basically was that my dad, for his fault, I was lucky enough to be sent to a multiracial school. I don't know if he realized at the time the effect that would have, because I had lots of friends of different colors. One of my good friends was a colored guy by the name of Mike Lewis. He eventually ran 400-meter Olympics hurdle for Malawi. And I got to talk. I had a very close relationship at school. I slept next to a black man. We had a relationship which was far removed from the relationship on farms in Zimbabwe where I grew up. Incidentally, I've left many years ago as well, and I've lived most of my life in South Africa. But it gave me a perspective of the situation which I'd really like to give to you today, and which maybe you can understand. What happened was, we'd get together at school, and you remember in the early 70s, there was this Bush War starting up in Zimbabwe, and a lot of it was political, but there was also this land element, and you can say, well, the two were confused. They were part of the same thing. But the situation was that I'd go back onto the farm, and I would have black people who worked with me, and they would be saying, so what's going to happen? Are you going to come back and shoot at us? And I would say to them, no, but are you going to shoot at me? And then I'd go back to school, where we are multiracial and we have these political arguments. It was a really weird situation. A lot of the boys that I was at school with, they went and took up arms, and a few of us went into exile, effectively exiled, because we disagreed with the whole political situation. We weren't interested in shooting our mates. I mean, it was just crazy even to think about that. And they didn't want to shoot us, so the only thing to do was to come down here to university instead of being in Zimbabwe, because then I would be part of the national service. And as I said to the guys then, well, when they called me up, well, which side am I going to fight for? I haven't decided yet. You calling me up as if I'm going to join your side because you won't, but maybe I'm going to join the other side. Well, of course, the farmers were not happy with me. You can imagine. I mean, they all wanted to have it out with me. And my dad, I mean, he didn't want to know me. You know, he came from the background where, you know, you just don't do that kind of thing. But I think that to give him credit, he could probably understand where I was coming from. To jump a step further forward, in 1983, that's 25 years ago, my dad died. I was living down here. I was working as an agricultural consultant. I have an agricultural degree. And my dad died, and he was farming in Zimbabwe. And you remember, independence was 1980 in Zimbabwe. There was a new government. The land issue was very much on the table, much as it is now. And I went up farming because I was the only son. So I ended up trying to run my business here and farming up there. And it was a very awkward situation. I really liked the farming life. I'd been born on a farm. I don't know how many people here are farmers. I think Mr. Matlala is obviously a farmer, but it's a different kind of life. I mean, there were great people working on the farms that that my dad had employed, and also on other farms that I got to know. Fantastic people, Peter Malalazi, Phineas and Paul Four, and a whole lot of others that became my friends. I was interested in giving these men opportunities on the farms of expanding, of really making a viable operation up there. And I'm just telling you this to give you an idea how my view of it was affected by the whole situation. I then tried to negotiate with the company that I was with in Zimbabwe. It was basically a family operation, but we ran as a company. I tried to negotiate with the other directors and say to them, look, I don't think this land situation is sustainable here. The company owned a fair amount of land, not huge, but a fair amount. And we had people who, in my opinion, were underpaid, very badly underpaid, in my opinion, and I wanted to improve the situation. And I came up against a whole lot of resistance. The other directors were older. They figured they had more experience than me, and they had a different view of things. And in a way, it's the same situation that we've got in South Africa historically. It was that kind of situation. So what happened was, as the years went by, now bring it forward to around about 1985, 1990, in that sort of situation, now we sort of like the same distance from independence here in South Africa for open free elections here in South Africa, because remember, Zimbabwe quite a lot earlier than us. So I would then go to the farmers' union meetings, and I'd say to them, listen, can't we do something here? And nobody wanted to hear. There was resistance to change. And the same kind of thing I'm perceiving will be the case here, and certainly is the case. And you will see from the presentations, I don't really like sitting here sort of like the legal corner now, where we get this legal argument. People will want to come with this legal argument, and they will say, well, this clause is against the Constitution or whatever, and we've got a fantastic Constitution. And then other people will be saying, oh, but like Mr. Matlala, it's ridiculous. We haven't got enough land, and we need 7% of the budget, and, you know, I can understand the situation. It's totally valid. I mean, everyone's quite correct in a lot of things that they've said here this morning. In July 2000, I had a meeting with the Commercial Farmers Union. Now, by that stage, I'd given up with our company. I couldn't get people to change. It was really difficult. And I went to the Commercial Farmers Union, which was the equivalent of AgriSA, up there, and they only represented a small, Mr. Olamisa will like this, about 4,500 farmers. It was a tiny little group of farmers who owned most of the commercial land. And I said to them, listen, chaps, this is absolutely ridiculous. We're going to have a major problem whether you like it or not. And why don't we negotiate this whole land situation so that everybody's happy? It doesn't have to be a win-lose situation. It can be a win-win situation. And they refused to listen. I'd like to tell you about the discussion that went on there, but it was absolutely absurd. These guys wouldn't see what I felt was common sense. And that's really why I'm coming to you now, and I'm saying it's sort of like, in a way, the same situation. We're now taking this bill and saying, well, okay, we have to have land reform, we need expropriation, let's enact it and go ahead and do it. And then against this there's going to be opposition. I mean, there's been mention here of legal cases, and I'm sure that there will be cases that will probably go to the Constitutional Court and so on. But underlying all this, and this is really getting to the nub of what I'm wanting to say to you, underlying all this is the reason why people do what they do. Are people really short-sighted? Can they not see the long-term benefits of land restitution and having a fair system? And I've given it so much thought over the years, and I look at this whole situation and I say, well, we've got a similar situation in all sorts of other countries where people behave in an unfair way. Black people do it. White people do it. The Nazis did it. I mean, what makes people do stuff which, in retrospect, we can see is totally wrong? I mean, I think white people just generally see that apartheid was wrong. It was just plain wrong. But it takes people a long time to get there. And what I'm saying here now about this situation is that one has to be so careful to avoid an injustice of any kind, however small. And I really mean however small. It can be the smallest little thing which really puts people's backs up and causes an immense amount of trouble. And I'm not a legal boffin, and I'm sure people will have looked at this bill and drafted it nicely. Power in the wrong hands is a devastating thing. I mean, you've seen it in the country up north. I witnessed it. I was one of the last white guys on the farm there when, I mean, I'd seen cattle butchered. I mean, we'd get up in the morning and there'd be these cattle with blood dripping out of their mouths. They'd been hacked on the back and their legs had been chopped in. I mean, it was terrible. And I'd say, but why do people do this? And it's because of frustration, like what you were mentioning earlier, Mr. Matala. It's a matter of frustration with not getting things done. And there's also, it has to be said, a lot of evil around. I mean, there were people who were raped. I was there. They were murdered. It's an absolute, and it's still going on. It's a horrific, horrific situation. Against this, I keep asking that question, why does this happen? And I went up to the, I don't know how many of you have been up to the Holocaust Center up the road here. I went in there one day and there was a lady who had her family murdered during the during the war, in the concentration camps. She was one of the sole survivors. And she said to me, you know, it was little things. It was, she had been in the in a school in Germany. She was Jewish. And she said, you know, it was little things. They didn't allow us to wear the same clothes as the other kids because we were Jewish. And she was the only one in her class with different clothes. So it was a differentiating kind of thing, and sort of this argument that we've been having early on about what should be a minority group or whites or whatever. It's always this business of drawing a little line between us and them. And it's such a dangerous thing. Sorry, interrupt. Yeah.
Okay, I've been listening to Mr. Lampkin.
I'm coming to the bill.
You're coming to
I am, yes,
the
right
subject
now.
Of
right
our
now.
Meeting,
yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Don't worry. Let me read for you a section. This is 10.1, item 4 on this bill. The minister may on such terms, I'm just paraphrasing a little bit here, such terms and conditions as he or she may determine, etc. Section 10.3, the minister shall have all the rights, powers, and duties to, there's a gap, conduct, I think this was about item subsection 4 or so, but you will know where it is better than I, to conduct a business or other economic enterprise and so on. And we've had discussions about those. People have mentioned it, and I'm not the best person, I'm not an attorney, but you know where that section is. There's item 5 on the section 11, the minister may on such terms and conditions as he or she may deem fit, and it carries on, there's a section there, sell, exchange, donate, lease, and so on. Do you hear what I'm saying? There's an enormous amount of power given to the minister, and please, this is absolutely nothing personal with anybody who holds the power. I have had the experience myself, I have a confession to make to you. I was elected in a small position. I work for a little, as a volunteer for a little NGO, that's my full-time job, not right now. And I worked for an organization where I was elected chairperson, and it was a smallish organization, but you know, as a chairperson, you end up with a bit of authority. And I was constantly tempted to say, you know, chaps, this is the best way to do it. And I hear what you're saying, but tough. And I can understand if you're in a big smart office and you're in a government employee and you're in that situation, it can happen very, very easily. I'm not saying that this bit of the bill is totally unwarranted. I could choose a whole lot of others. There's a whole lot of sections here which raise concern. I mean, even the name, the land reform. You know, this actually called land reform. This is 16 policy. This was under the memorandum that goes on. It was mentioning the policy is proactive land based. Proactive land acquisition strategy, and I hear that the SA Agricultural Union agree with a proactive approach, and I absolutely am for a proactive approach. We've got to do something about this. It's something which is fundamental to South Africa, in my humble opinion, and please, you know, I'm just really coming here and appealing to you. It is an important thing for the country in the long-term future to have this land issue really fairly resolved. And I think that there's a lot of goodwill here as well. I hear goodwill in this room today. I hear people being conciliatory about the past, being prepared to adopt sections of the Act that you might say, well, maybe we shouldn't. But on the other hand, I know also that there's going to be a lot of problems down the way. And what I'm really saying here is that we need to take a very, 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 very fair approach with this. And I'm hoping that just reading a few of those sections to you on this bill, you can see the danger. And I'm sure all of you can see the danger with this. And I understand where Mr. McLeod is coming from and saying we need to do this thing quickly. It's been too slow. It's been mentioned many times over that this land, yeah, sorry, I'm nearly finished.
No, proceed.
It's an issue which needs to be addressed quickly. There's no question of doubt about it. In my humble opinion, Mr. Matlala's 7%. Well, maybe if you're just looking at the financial costs, we might even look at something a lot bigger over a period of time. I think, I mean, if it were me, I would be looking at, I don't know, 70%, 80% of the land being transferred in some way or other. But it might cost a lot of money. It may be, I mean, if you think about Eskom. Eskom are recapitalizing, we're talking 300 billion. Oh, well, I don't see why agriculture shouldn't restructure at a cost of $100 billion. All right, agriculture is only a small percentage of the GDP of the country, and one could argue, you could say, well, I think it's, am I correct in saying somewhere around about, you'll know better than me, but it's around about 2.7% to about 4.5%, depending on what the year is like. As far as I know, it'd be in that sort of region. But if you include all the agro industries, it's probably around about 12 to 15%. Am I right? Somewhere in that region. So you could argue and you could say, well, how can we spend $100 billion? Well, maybe that's the value in my rough estimate of what 70% of the land would cost. But I don't think we should be looking at it in those sort of terms of spending the $100 billion. I think that we should be looking at terms of better ways of doing the transfer, not just shelling out money, because that's not economically viable, in my humble opinion. I think there's a lot of better ways of doing it. And I think that you'll find that farmers, white commercial farmers and black farmers, are not as short-sighted as what some people sort of imagine, that they're not looking far down the way and saying, we need the resolution that makes everybody happy. So what I'm saying is that this bill, as it is, it's not the detail that I have a problem with. It's not the detail. It's far more, it's the fact that we need to bring along the white commercial sector in a much more active and progressive manner, in my opinion. I think that it's absolutely important to this country and the future of the country that they are more involved than what they've been. And I know that there have been summits and so on, and that the SA Agriculture Union is here. And I know that there's been a lot of consultation. And people will say, but then we want to talk more and it's going to take longer. I think we should do this whole job a lot faster. I think that we should get to 70% if it were 70% in maybe 5 years. I mean, I'm not talking about a long period. I think that we should do this very quickly. Maybe you could say I'm a radical, but I've seen what's happened up there. I was there when they set the whole farm alight, and I drove out at 8 o'clock one night with the farm burning. So, please, I've seen what can happen. I know what the situation is. Maybe in time you have to have a bill like this. I would really ask you to reconsider. I think that it should be scoped myself. I think that the time is not right for doing it, but that's just my opinion. And please, just my opinion. I really thank you. I'm honored to be able to have a chance to speak to you. Thanks very much.
So you had a collision course with the revolution.
I did.
I'm going to a meeting of chairpersons. Honorable Khrileng will take it from there.
Thank you, Chair. Questions from members? Mr. Nell? Honorable Nell? I think you must use the next one, please.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to say, for the record, Chairman, that we are not against this bill, because it is necessary to do a lot of the things that is in this bill. I also want to say that we don't see the potential unconstitutionality as was held up here this day. I don't think there is anything of that in this bill. But what I said yesterday about the sensitivity, and Annalise has alluded to that about the appropriation bill, and we don't know where that is at the moment. Can we put in here something that can give a little more certainty on how the minister will handle especially 10.1b? And I've proposed something yesterday, and I want to ask Annalise now if something in the way of to put in after acquire or to even put in after 10-1 at the end, which describes the minister's power, in the way of saying that in a just and equitable way, just to connect it to the Constitution 25 in how compensation must be accounted for. I want Annelies to just give something on that, and on the rest of the committee, if I'm not here on Tuesday, please regard that as quite serious input. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Nell. Honourable Lorimisa, followed by Honourable Tlali.
I would have imagined that anything that has to be done by the minister or any minister would have, especially relating to land reform, would be guided by the provisions of Section 25, which talk about the need for redress as well as equitable manner of doing things. But the one question I have for Ms. Crosby is that doesn't it in any event follow that expropriation is resorted to when there's no agreement between the state and the landowner when it comes to the question of land reform? So why then would do you want to oppose that is a bill that seeks to promote a rapid land reform, which is supported by all, by seeking to unlock the logjam that arises as a result of there being no agreement between farmers or landowners in the state? What mechanism would you suggest other than that of resorting to land reform? Because in any event, even if the minister does decide to appropriate, I would imagine that the aggrieved party has a right to go to court.
Yeah, thanks, Jefferson. Let me assure my comrade Nell that even if you don't know you on Tuesday, I will definitely represent you, don't worry. You know, I don't know whether he is a member of AgriSA, you know, but he seemed to be appealing to... Okay, so he is also representing your interest. Don't worry, she will be there for you, you know. She will be there for you. You know, I'm just trying to check, because it seems to me you are more focusing on the Expropriation Act per se, because your concern is very sort of understandable. I'm not saying you as individual, I'm talking you as AgriSA. I thought when NAFO was speaking generally on behalf of every farmer, you know, not only NAFO. Maybe thinking back that, you see, we farmers, you know. No, it seems to me that here now, you see, if you look at page 2, on page 2 of your presentation, right on top, there's a bullet point there. If you look at that bullet point, you are saying something. The state should not be a large landowner. The state. You know, this reminds me when we were dealing with one of the legislation at Minerals and Energy years ago, where the resources, you know, the resources that it's a state that's supposed to own, whether it's water or in minerals, whatever, so that the state is able then to intervene in terms of the market, within the market forces itself. Because if you say the state should not be large land owner, how then the state is going to be able to redistribute, to redress the imbalances? You know, there's an issue that was raised earlier in terms of the exorbitant amount of money that is, in essence, is wanted by the present landowners. So in essence, that may be addressed if the state, as people's government, represents the interests of people. Now, further in that bullet point, you are saying, once the beneficiaries have met certain conditions, what are those conditions are you talking about? Which can be set to ensure the sustainability use of the land. Title should be transferred to them. You are then saying that, hang on, before the title deed is transferred or registered on your name, you must meet certain conditions. What are those conditions? Let's assume if some poultry has never been a farmer, you know, like myself. Now, what condition must I meet before I've been given this piece of land? Should I be a millionaire first, or should I go to the bank and get money first? What are you trying to say here? Or if I don't have the skills, I must go and acquire skills somewhere else. Or if I have to go to university to have an agricultural degree, I must go and have an agricultural degree before I become a farmer. I'm not sure what are you trying to, you know, just please explain to me. On the same page, you are raising other issues. AgriSA is not in favor of the ministers exercising powers of expropriation to acquire going concern and movable assets for a registration in terms of this act. That is a paragraph second from the bottom. You see, I understand the going concern is somebody who is prepared, you know, to give, whether it's sheep, goats, cattle, tractors, implements, whatever it may be. Definitely, in that sense, definitely there'd be no need. But in reality, you know, you may see things here in the paper, in reality, that's not the case. So how do you begin to address then the reality of the situation there? You know. In the same paragraph, you are saying the exercise of these powers in terms of the contemplated new occupation act is not acceptable to the organization. Therefore, AgriSA cannot support this bill as long as it contains a clause which allows for expropriation in terms of the contemplated expropriation bill. I suppose when you link with the expropriation bill, I link with another proposition bill, but not the bill before us. I'm assuming that you are linking to that bill, which we may not be able to assure you anything to the bill which is not before us. We're just dealing with the bill that is before us. What Public Works is doing there is neither here nor there for us. We will of course appreciate if the bill can be transferred to us, so that we can fast track that bill and finish now, not tomorrow. You know, because it seems to me they are not moving faster in terms of that bill. You see, the reason I'm raising this is sometimes, even when we're dealing with that bill in minerals and energy, the whole mining industry came down here. They were all crying. All of them came down to say, once you do this, there will be a crash in this country. The investment won't come, everything will come. De Beers was led by the, Richman Diamond, yeah, from Kimberley. This young chap from Kimberley. No, not the guy. Yeah, Oppenheimer's son, whatever, you know. He led a delegation here when we're doing that bill. No, they were really, they also employed a number of lawyers, you know, to come before us. Then, I was then that committee. Said there will be a crash, you know, if you do this. Fine. We said, no, we listen to you, but we are lawmakers. We'll make this law. If the crash, we'll be responsible for the other to crash. The bill was passed. It's an act today. Nothing happens. Absolutely nothing happened. The investment even came more than what it was before. They invested in this country. So this question of investment is running because you are talking about the last page there. You are just saying, but it will only do so if the acquisition of assets happens in a fair manner, comma, which is not detrimental to business confidence and investment. We're not going to be detected by business investment. No, not at all. If we have to intervene in the market, we have to do that. we're not going to be threatened by the business confidence or by investment. Because those people that are coming here to exploit the working class, nothing else. They are just interested in the profit, making business, nothing else. So as lawmakers, we have to protect them. As lawmakers, we have no choice. We talk about people's government. People by the people, for the people. That's how we're supposed to operate. As I said to the young guys, that were there, you know, the solidarity chaps that were here, that in reality of the situation, we have to do certain things as lawmakers. Maybe you can just a little bit, maybe to Mr. What is this? Lambton, yeah. You see, all due respect to you, sir, I was struggling to understand where you're coming from in terms of why you're thinking. But of course, after a lot of time, you came to your conclusion, what you wanted to say. To say, in terms of your letter here, because I assume this is a letter, it doesn't even say where you're coming from. Or you are just an ordinary citizen of this country. That's fine. This is a people's parliament, you know. Any citizen can come and talk. You know, but he worries because you see what happened in Zimbabwe. Let's start there. Not to waste time, of course. It had a reason. You know, we went as a committee. Nkosi was there with me. We met both parties about how many years ago? Yeah, it's about 4 or 5 years ago, if I'm correct. We met MTC. We met ZANU-PF. We're in the same room. They all agree with the policy. They say that policy is good policy. All of them. But the concern was implementation. So which means, let us just brush as if everything is just a mess. It's only the implementation that went wrong. But the policy itself is very good. In fact, if you look at that policy there, well, even this country is still far, far in terms of meeting that requirement, in terms of that policy. Tina Ampa, we are right playing games. I can tell you now, we are playing games. Because we'll never transform the agricultural sector the pace that we are moving. Never, never. And you see, the problem with this thing is that some of you are really happy with the situation. Very happy. You know, there's something that was done, that was the friend-led ownership commission or something that was done. We wanted then to say what's going to happen. I don't know, maybe the minister will know. He's gathering dust somewhere, that thing now, you know. Nothing's taking place. While that thing is gathering dust somewhere else, the foreigners are buying land. Like Amagwinya, you know. You know, but assist us because we need to move in this. The question of your last line to say scrap the bill. We sympathize with you because of your own experience somewhere there. We said we're not going to do that, but you can see that the Honorable Nell is one of the whiteys here. You know, he says very clear that the bill is very good. So I suppose when the DA, I suppose when the DA says that, that's fine. You are just, you know, you must understand that. But anyway, we are saying here in terms of, I am concerned that the above bill may not adequately facilitate this approach, and I will therefore be happy to make an oral, which you have done, in this regard, whatever you have done, in essence. I will appreciate if you were really dare to some of the sections specifically, because I believe that the only concern is that section 10, which is a question of the acquiring of immovable property, of course. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Singh, followed by Mr. Abram. Members, I do not want to inhibit you, but we must keep our hour now on time. Time is against us, so if possible, try to be prompt and to the point. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'll be very brief. I'm at
just a point of order. The report on foreign land ownership
Honorable Valley is not gathering dust. We are having a draft policy that has been worked on by an interdepartmental task team, and we have also a draft legislation. If we have time, you can still pass it this year.
Thank you, Minister. You can proceed.
I think that was a very timely intervention by the Minister. Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'm at a bit of a disadvantage because I wasn't here for the presentation and I'm busy dealing with finance issues and how much tax you're going to pay and each one of us are going to pay when we submit our tax returns. But just a few questions. Firstly, the principle of the bill and the desirability is supported by us because it's important that we empower farmers and we support them and ensure that they have all the necessary tools to be able to them for them to be profitable. The one question I want to ask, and maybe it won't be answered here, is when we say land is going to be acquired for to promote economic growth, is it land only for agriculture and agriculture-related purposes, or is it land that can be acquired for any purpose? That's the first question. Secondly, the holding function, I think, which Agri South Africa has referred to in their document. You see, it's important, I believe, that there must be some time frame. Because while Mr. Zali argues that, you know, are you going to wait for the farmer to be qualified and all sorts of things before he gets acquisition of the farm, I think the state has a reciprocal obligation to make sure that they do not put farmers into a debt trap. If they acquire an enterprise, it must be profitable, it must be viable, and it must be in that kind of state when it is passed on to any farmer. And I think here, maybe somewhere or the other, we need to know at what stage and what exercises is the state going to engage in to make sure that a farm or an enterprise is profitable and viable before it's passed on to a beneficiary, and that beneficiary can obviously be a previously disadvantaged farmer. On the section 75-76, there are references in the bill here to provinces playing a role and transfers to provinces. And I don't know whether the legal advisers are correct in saying that this is just the section 75. Because when it comes to implementation, it might be a 76 issue. So I think that's something else. And lastly, whilst this is not the forum for the debate on the expropriation bill, I mean, that's happening outside of here. But I think we must also be alive to the fact that what happens there is going to have some effect on this bill here itself. And we must be alive to that, and we must also consider that. We're not saying whether that is right or wrong, but there is going to be an implication on this particular bill here. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'll have to obey your instruction to be very brief. Chair, I just want to ask Mr. Lumsden, did he, when he concluded his remarks, say that he believes that this act should not, this bill should not be proceeded with? Now, thank you very much that we at least know that you're clear on that. That is your suggestion. Now, Chairperson, to Ms. Crosby, according to the memorandum on the objects of the bill, organized agriculture was apparently consulted on the bill. Now, is Ms. Crosby saying that clause 6 was inserted in the bill after consultation? Now, fine, Chair, even if that is the case, the Expropriation Act is section 12 of the Principal Act. And therefore, the principle of expropriation is not a new principle. It is included in the old act. Fine, perhaps the new proposals may need the dotting of I's and crossing of T's and perhaps some cleaning up here or there. That's something that can be looked at. But has Agri South Africa any specific suggestion with regard to the particular clause? The expropriation clause. The other issue, Chairperson, is the mechanism that Ms. Crosby says should be built into the bill to provide to prevent the movable assets from being pilfered, as it, you know, in short, it's a question of pilferage. Because they're movable, on the date that the assets are taken over, one is not sure, you know, how the assets are going to be managed. Because, you know, it's very simple to remove some sheep and cattle and tractors and things. It can happen, and it has happened in other instances. So, have you perhaps a suggestion, and I know that you're a legal eagle, for such assets from being prevented, from being sold or damaged, in the period between the acquisition of those assets and its eventual, I wouldn't call it transfer, but its eventual takeover by beneficiary or beneficiaries. If you could perhaps provide us with that information, it will help substantially. Now, Chair, what one must remember here, and where one has to pay particular attention to the amendment bill, in the amendment bill, is the insertion of the objects of the Principal Act. And I get the impression that there is nobody here is saying that the Principal Act was wrong. It has served its purpose. We live in different times. It needs to be adapted. Now, of course, one can argue about various forms of adaption, but I'm certain that at the end of the day, the Portfolio Committee will apply its mind, because one thing that I'm very conscious of are unintended consequences. You don't want to do something today which you will regret in 10 years' time, because it can have consequences that you never thought of when you legislated, when you passed the bill. So naturally, we look at those things. But I think, basically, what we are trying to do here is to give effect to land and related reform obligations of the state in terms of Section 25 of the Constitution. And this basically means that we've got to give effect to promote, facilitate, support, or support the maintenance, planning, sustainable use, development, and improvement of property contemplated in this Act. And therefore, we have to contribute to poverty alleviation and to promote economic growth, apart from the fact that we need to see that the skewed ownership patterns are also brought in line and start reflecting the demographic realities of our country. And yeah, please, I believe that South Africa is one nation. We are all one nation. I don't believe in giving people racial tags. And I wish that we will come to a stage, perhaps in my lifetime, not that I've got very long to go, but that we would come to a stage where we can proudly say that I'm proudly South African. I'm part of Africa, finish and plan. So, Chairperson, I would like us to take note of these things. And, Chair, if the institutions and bodies that have come before us could assist us in making practical suggestions, that please insert this particular wording or look at that wording, then we must be prepared to look at it and see in what way will it advance the cause of the Principal Act, where the amendments are merely aimed at helping the Principal Act to achieve what is required today. I agree, and I said this yesterday to the DG, at the briefing, that some of our records do not augur too well. And we therefore need to have very strict regulations that need to be adhered to so that the processes run smoothly. And of course, what is central to the implementation of any measure, any law, is that you have the necessary expertise, that you have the necessary skills, that you have the necessary warm bodies that can do the job. That is what counts. And Mr. Lumsden, thank you for sharing your experiences with us. I am certain that we will learn from those experiences. But as my colleague has stated, there's a lot that can be said, you know, in favor of what has happened and against what has happened. But thank you nevertheless. It was nice having you here. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Member. I would now like to ask Mrs. Crosby to respond, and then Mr. Lumsden, then the DG, because some of the you need to answer. And the last word will be if the Minister wants to say anything. But I also appeal to you to be very brief. Thank you.
Chairperson, what Mr. Singh has said is correct. I agree with Mr. Dlali, the expropriation bill is being dealt with in another committee, but unfortunately it has a very huge impact on the perceptions about expropriation and on the specific submission that we have made here. I said to you, I probably would not even have been here had it not been for that debate taking place. Because you will also refer to Section 25 and the guarantees in the Constitution. One of the problems with this expropriation bill, the main problem that we have with it, is that we do not think it is in line with Section 25 of the Constitution. We think it is actually contrary to some of the guarantees in the Constitution. And because that has happened, it has raised fears amongst farmers that they will not have access to court, full access to court, if they are, for example, not treated fairly in the determination of compensation or the time and manner of the payment of compensation. And because of that debate, at this point in time, the farmers are uncomfortable with the idea of expropriation because of the way that it is contemplated in that bill. Because of the strong emphasis on compensation, which may very well be less than market value, and we know market value is not the only consideration, but there's a strong emphasis to in the policy document in the board to say that it can be substantially less than market value. The very wide powers that are given not only to the minister but up to municipal level to expropriate, and the limitation on the right of the affected landowner to then approach the court and have the court determine that. So at this point in time, we would actually prefer that there be no expropriation powers in this bill. We are not in principle against expropriation, and I have personally given speeches to large groups of farmers prior to this new expropriation bill, telling them that expropriation is nothing to be afraid of. It's something that happens everywhere in the world. It's something that our Constitution provides for, and it's something that is necessary in certain circumstances. One of the honourable members mentioned the situation where there is no agreement on price, and particularly in a restitution type of situation, the state may very well reach a point where it has no option but to expropriate. But we're saying in the redistribution context, we can understand that expropriation is a necessary tool within restitution, even within tenure reform in certain circumstances. But within the redistribution arena, we feel that there are far better options, options of cooperation on an area based approach, and partnerships with the private sector, because the land is available. AgriSA still maintains that there is a lot of land that comes onto the market. We believe that there are ways of also coming to fair agreements on price. There are practical problems at this point in time with some of the valuations, and if those can be dealt with, it will go a long way in getting towards fair prices that are agreed upon. But we're very wary, and Mr. Nell, to answer your question more directly, I think anything that goes towards addressing that fear within the farming community would be of some assistance. I'm not going to commit on the specific wording now and say that that is going to solve the problem, but I think it will go some way towards addressing the fear that exists around the expropriation. So I hope by saying that I've dealt with Mr. Mons and Hels as well as Nkosi Olumisa and to some extent with Mr. Dlali's question. Because Mr. Dlali correctly said that we're focusing on the expropriation bill, that is true. The problem, the real problem lies there, not with this bill. But because of that, it also has an impact on this process. And at this point in time, we don't know what is going to happen with that bill. So that puts us in a very difficult position. Now, on the question of whether the state should be a large landowner, we're not saying that we have a problem with the state acquiring the land. We're saying the state should not in the long term hold on to that land. And in conjunction with that, the issue of the conditions, it's actually not us that are saying, I think it's in the LARP document, the DG will be able to correct me there if I'm wrong, but they are actually conditions set out whereby the whole idea is now that there should be proper planning for land reform, because we're worried about the failed projects. The way to address that is to first of all have proper planning. That would be one condition, business plans, all of that. A second condition would be training and mentorships where that is required. The issues of sustainability and profitability that Mr. Singh mentioned. There would have to be some proof if we're serious about sustainable food production and having successful farmers. And I'm now talking about agricultural land that is still going to be used for agriculture in future. I'm not talking about land that will be used for housing or other purposes. Then we need to have those kind of conditions in place before the land is then transferred. But we're saying there shouldn't be a long delay between government acquiring the land and the land then being transferred to the eventual beneficiaries. The issue of investment, I don't want to go into too much of a debate around that, but I don't think it's correct to say that nothing has happened as far as the mineral rights situation is concerned. Government is at this point in time still being faced by some potential serious claims for damages that hasn't yet gotten to the courts but may still get there. And also, if you talk to the farming community, you know, what's happening to agricultural land now in terms of mining companies coming in, not having consulted properly, that's a whole other debate. But there have been serious unintended consequences due to that bill. So I don't think it's correct to say nothing has happened. On the issue of investment, I'm no expert in that, but there are two forms of investment. There's investment from outside, and then there's investment from the industry itself. Now, I'm told by the wine farmers, for example, that if you don't, as a wine farmer, continually, like in every year, invest in, by improving the infrastructure and the cultivars and all of that, then you'll be out of the market in a couple of years. Now, the farmers themselves haven't been investing for a number of years now already because of the uncertainty. Uncertainty is the biggest single threat to investment. And there's studies that actually prove that. There's a particular study that was presented to me a while ago that the Free Market Foundation did, where there's a very direct link between security of property rights and the investment and people's standing or standard of living in various countries. So investment is important, and though I agree with Mr. Dlali that there are a lot of other things that are as important or maybe even more important, and I agree that there's a very real danger that people's frustrations may get out of hand, it's not as easy to say that we needn't worry about investment. That is something that the committee definitely does need to take into consideration as well. Mr. Singh asked whether, in terms of this bill, land can be acquired for anything else than agriculture. My interpretation is yes, it need not only be for agricultural purposes. And then he also talked of time frames for the state holding the land, which is something that we would agree with, although we don't have any specific proposals at this point in time as to what those time frames should be. Mr. Abram asked about the consultation. Yes, I actually have the two versions with me. The one that we were consulted on did not have the clause around expropriation and bringing it in line with the new expropriation bill. I don't think it was done deliberately. I think it's something that happened subsequently due to the whole expropriation bill process, but we were not consulted on it at that point in time. Now, it is true that the minister does have expropriation powers in terms of the act as it stands. I think ever since 1998, when that act was first amended, the minister has had these powers. But what we're saying is those powers are now being extended, not only to cover land, but also the movable assets, the shares, and the going concerns. And because of the fear that I was explaining before around expropriation, we're not quite comfortable with that. There was a question around the movable assets and how those should be protected. We can supply you with a wording. I won't be able to do it right here and now, but within a day or so we can supply you with a suggested wording. But the kinds of things, and I think these would probably be better catered for in regulations rather than in the bill itself, but the kinds of things that one could look at is an asset register where there's also a valuation coupled to the specific asset, and then somebody, an individual, needs to be made responsible, whether it be a government official or a mentor or whoever, but somebody actually needs to be assigned responsibility for these assets. Chair, I think I've covered all the questions. If there's anything that I left out, you can come back to me.
Thank you, Mrs. Crosby. Mr. Lumpton, very briefly, please.
Thank you. I will be very brief. Just a couple of comments quickly. I think you're absolutely right about the question of implementation. It's not the policy that's the problem. You remember you mentioned MDC and Zone of PF. And even with this bill, I don't think that it's so much the thinking behind it, which the details and so on, which are the problem. I think that there's just too much room for unfairness. And I'm not saying that the minister would implement it unfairly. Minister looks like a very nice person to me, but there's always, you know, I mean, next we're going to have another minister, and then the problem is one leaves oneself open if there are clauses which can be abused, and the issue of see Mr. Nazara leaving, the issue of some people are happy with the situation. It certainly doesn't apply to me. I'm not happy unless most people are happy. And I think that should apply to most people, because unless that is the situation, we haven't resolved anything. And finally, just a comment about the just clarity on what I'm saying. I'm saying I don't think this bill should be implemented right now. I'm not saying that we won't get to that stage ever. That's just my opinion. I'm saying that there's just too much room for unfairness, and that we might have those unintended consequences with it. That's just my view. I think that we could have a CODESA 2, we were talking about Polokwane 2, to really better clarify this land issue and to resolve it in a better way than what we've got at the moment. And I'm not saying this should be dragged out. I think it could be done early next year. By middle of next year, we're implementing. I don't think it has to be dragged out. I think we should do it quickly and in a better way. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Lumpton. DJ?
Thank you very much. The first one relates, it was from Honorable Nkuna, it was relating to the untraceable beneficiaries. Most of her comments seem to lean on the restitution claimants that are untraceable, which relate to financial compensation on urban claims, so it may not be subject of this. But yes, yesterday it was raised, the question was raised about the land reform beneficiaries who may not be available and interested in agriculture. What should we do with those? And the response is that we need to give these beneficiaries an opportunity. Some of them may not be using the land because of the challenges with the inputs or the resources to be able to use the land immediately. So I think that question is related to the ability of the beneficiaries to use the assets that we are buying for them. And the answer there lies in the support that is provided. And we say that this bill is going to encourage us, if it becomes an act, to be able to enable these people to use the land immediately at the time of transfer instead of wait for assistance with movable assets. And then to the presentations, as we have done yesterday, we have said that, I mean, on the other presentations, from Jeff Lumsden, our view is that this bill is responding to the issues on the ground, on the problems that we have seen in the implementation of the of this land reform program in South Africa. It addresses definitely equity, fairness, and justice, and the pillars of this are actually those pillars, and they flow from the from the Constitution. So there's nothing unconstitutional about them. And what we what you are saying is that there is danger, but we have not clearly stated what this danger is. And we believe that it is induced by your experiences in Zimbabwe more than the reality on the ground here in the country. And what you are saying is absolute power in the minister. We believe it to be a perception. In this country, most of the legislation give powers to the ministers that are the executive officers. And this bill is not an exception to that. Actually, the existing legislation which we are amending is already giving those powers. So there's nothing new about this. And then the other issue that was raised by the Declared Foundation about Section 10, our view is that the intention is not to empower the minister to determine compensation outside the existing legislation. We have said that this is talking about issues of disposal and acquisition, which are part of the processes of land acquisition. And we are going to deal with the proposals that were talking to the issues of expropriation. In fact, we are saying that the existing legislation has a provision on legislation. What we added was the sub-clause 5, and simply that clause is talking just about complying with the amended Expropriation Act. Whether we put that in the bill or not does not make any difference. So we'll be making proposals to the committee that we delete that clause 5, given these presentations here. Then the issue of the delegated power which was raised, we believe that this will be done. It's an administrative matter. It's not a big problem, and it will be done within the legal and constitutional framework. The issues raised by the Institute, they were raising issues that relate to provision Section 9 of the Constitution and Section 25 of the Constitution. We are saying that this amendment bill is based on the provisions of Section 25 of the Constitution, and thus its tenets are the justice, equitable redress, and fairness. It is not considered that there is any unconstitutional exclusion on the part of this this bill. I'm not going to mention, to go back to the quotation of what those provisions are in the Constitution. They are given. On Section 1, that allows persons who are already own land to also qualify for this assistance, we are saying we are not conceding that there is prejudice here in this provision. It is for all citizens. But we are leaning on the Constitution. That Constitution talks about redress and equity, and that we cannot turn a blind eye to those inequalities that are existing. The issue of aftercare, I think we have actually covered some of those things in these provisions, even if we have not used the word aftercare in the object of the bill. We have actually dealt with that with that issue. The issues that are raised by AgriSA, again, we think that there is this fear about expropriation bill. The intention is not to empower the minister to do to determine compensation outside the existing legislative framework. And as such, this issue, we have covered it with the other presentation, that this will mean that we must review that section of the clause. When it comes to the mechanism of protecting movable assets and selling them immediately after acquisition, and how to care for those assets when they are in the hands of the state, we are saying that there is the provision of the PFMA and the National Treasury regulations as to what we must do when we take care of the assets of the state. In fact, in this particular regard, we have made arrangements of caretakership and strategic partnerships. In terms of the transfer, our policies set certain conditions for the selection and support of beneficiaries. We have confirmed this at the Agri Summit in Polokwane, and that we are discussing these conditions which relate to issues like use it or lose it. So those conditions will be there. In terms of what Agri SA is saying, they cannot support the bill as long as it contains the clause of expropriation. I think we have addressed that. Concerning NAFU, we think that we welcome the comments made by NAFU. We confirm that in the objects of the bill, we have covered economic growth. We may concede to include empowerment. We have not put that word empowerment as proposed by NAFU, but we can consider that. And also, we are conceding to what was discussed even yesterday about to the fact that we must include skills development and empowerment as part of the objects of this, because that is indeed what we think is important and should be covered in this bill. And we are saying that we will provide adequate resources for that purpose. I think I've tried to cover all, Chairperson. The Honourable Singh, he's not here, but I think we have tried to cover that in the responses.
Thank you, Gigi. Honourable Minister, do you want to?
Thank you. I won't take your time. I just want to thank the participants and the submissions, particularly the concerns that have been raised by the farmers' unions. They have assisted us to look at the gaps in the bill. We will also address the fears and the revolutions, small or big. I think that is why we went to Polokwane too, so that we can address some of the fears and some of the concerns. I'm happy that especially the farmers' unions are aware of the need for us to move forward and to fast-track land reform, and this is what this bill will actually assist the department to achieve. I also want to say that, especially to Agri SA, that we accept the importance of private-public partnerships. We've already started to work through strategic partnerships, commercial farmers and emerging farmers working together, and transfer of skills is beginning to happen. And we think through this bill again, we'll be able to fast-track as well that program. And there is a lot of goodwill among commercial farmers who want to support the government's reform program, land reform program. And also the issue of skills, skills transfer is very important to us, and I'm glad that the DG has alluded to that so that we take cognizance and highlight the importance of that activity program. I also want lastly to thank honorable members for their critical but constructive contribution. I believe that your contribution will help us to come out at the end of the day with a good, very good piece of legislation. Lastly, I want to thank the contribution from Zimbabwe to say that Zimbabwe is an independent and sovereign state. They have their laws, they have their constitution. South Africa is an independent and sovereign country. We have our laws, our constitution, and whatever we do is according to the rule of law and is based on our constitutional imperatives. So I will leave it there and say thank you very much, Honorable Members.
Thank you, Honorable Minister. Lunch is ready outside, and I just want to remind members that our next meeting will be next Tuesday, the 26th of August, in V226 at 10 o'clock. Thank you. The meeting is adjourned. Yeah.